from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be on the planet's time zones. Every single one of them covered by this radio program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Great to be with you, honored to be with you, to escort you through the weekend of, well, who knows what. Coming up in a, you know, in our history, the short human history that we have, I guess as far as UFOs are concerned, we would probably name Roswell first, right? And then I think many people would name the Meyer case, the Billy Meyer case, and then the Phoenix Lights probably in more modern day. Michael Horn, coming up in a moment, has researched the Meyer case, the UFO contacts, for 26 years. Michael Horn is now the authorized American media representative for the Meyer case. And the new book, a quote, "And Still They Fly," end quote, in 2001, Michael challenged the top international professional skeptics to duplicate the Meyer photographic evidence. Their complete failure to do so culminated in their public refusal to submit their photographs for scientific testing. Even more importantly, the specific, prophetically accurate information spanning 50 years that Meyer has published continues to be confirmed by events as they unfold. For his trouble, there have been 19 documented assassination attempts on Meyer's life. Michael is convinced that the Meyer case is the most important story in all of human history. In a moment, we'll examine why and whether it really is true. Stay right there. I would not think there would be too many in this educated audience that would not know about the Meyer case. However, one never knows, and so it bears asking Michael very quickly, just in case there are some people out there not familiar with the Meyer case, who is Billy Meyer and what happened to him?
Sure. May I take just a moment before I launch into that, because I'm delighted to do it, and just give you sincere thanks for having me on again, especially because I think you were too modest to acknowledge that the sun setting in the sea, the sizzling sounds of the skeptics disappearing into anonymity, was probably the coup de grace was the appearance on your show in March of 2004 when they refused to have their little dinky photos of the model UFOs subjected to the same testing as Meyer's. And just so you and your audience will know, right after that, James Randi, who had called the case a farce any child could see through, withdrew his claim that it was a hoax. So I'm going to be happy to answer your question, and then we can perhaps move on to the content of the case. I'm going to say up front, we now know that the case is true, and I'm going to be delighting in telling you that and accepting your challenges. So, who is Billy Meyer? He is about a week away from being a 68-year-old Swiss man, often called a simple Swiss farmer, because he lives in a farm and has lived in a farm for many years, I guess. As I say, he has one arm and has only had one arm since 1965, which is pivotal to some of the aspects of this case. He claims that since he was 5 years of age, that he has been having voluntary face-to-face and onboard contacts, not abductions, onboard contacts with human beings from another star system that we have commonly but mistakenly identified as the Pleiadian star system, Pleiades, that we see in the night sky. Mm-hmm. His contacts are with humans. He has met, he claims, members of many, many different types of races, primarily human, but some others that would be considered strange to us. Before I say any more about it, let me just put the allegedly over those parts of this that we can't prove when we speak about things that either haven't happened yet or information that pertains to past history that we have not yet either proved or disproved, okay?
A lot of people would ask, why a farmer?
Sure.
In Switzerland, why not the President of the United States, the President or the leader of the Soviet Union or Russia now or whatever?
Sure. Well, it is not commonly known, but it is on record, that in 1979, these ETs, authorized Meyer to authorize the investigative team to present an offer to the U.S. government under President Jimmy Carter for contacts to begin between the Pleiaren, as these people are known, and the U.S. government. I have seen that letter. I even have an email copy of it. The contact offer was turned down. The primary reason, apart from other terms that may have been off-putting to the U.S. government, was that for the time being, these contacts, the intermediary for the Pleiaren would be Meyer. And so that apparently didn't sit well with the egos that were sitting in the White House, if that story is true. So, again, these are the types of things where when you ask some of these questions, I have to simply report the information as I know it.
So you're saying they began with Meyer, but they desire the contacts that we're talking about.
Not necessarily, but they were offered. In other words, they would not be a substitute for the contacts with Meyer because the purpose of the contacts with Meyer, just so I'll reiterate and detail this, but to bottom line it, the long efforts of, let's say, 53 years of information that they've given him and that he has painstakingly published for at least the last 30 has been focused on a bottom line for now, and that is pertaining to the human race's future survival. That's what we're going to actually get to here. It's not so much about technology. It's not so much about meeting the Space Brothers and all that stuff.
Mm.
I understand those questions and those concerns. They fascinate me. But after researching this as diligently as I have, and there are many other people that have done it, those are my conclusions.
Okay. But if it's a question of our survival as a planet, which is what you just said, then that information obviously would be better served going to the leaders of the planet, those who would have some possibility of having an effect on what's going on.
Well, here's how it's looked at. As far as they're concerned, and they were telling this to Meyer back as far as 1975 at least, it is not the leadership of the planet that is going to take the planet voluntarily in, quote-unquote, the right direction. This has to be done at a level of self-responsibility that starts with each individual and expands upward from there. In other words, as I say on the DVD, we must lead the leaders.
Well, I don't like to be cynical, but if that's true, we're doomed.
We may well be.
I
don't want to be cynical either, and that's why when I consider this tonight to be the most important appearance regarding the Meyer case I've ever done in my life. Albeit for you and I, it's relatively brief, but I think in the period of time that we have, I will give you and your listeners something to think about, and if anybody can come away with anything less than this is the most important story in history and we need to wake up, they're free to, as they sometimes do, harangue me with emails.
Uh-huh. Well, when I said doomed, I don't think that I've known a time in the world where there is less individual responsibility going on than today. And maybe that's just my aging.
No, you're right.
But I think I'm right.
Yeah, hence we're in trouble. And so however you want to look at it, whether the information comes from alleged ETs or Swiss farmers or Art Bell or Michael Horn, or the man in the street and the woman in the street all over the world, we're accurately perceiving we are in trouble. I don't think that a lot of people fully understand the depth of it, the kind of momentum of events that are upon us, and I can't tell you I fully understand everything. We're all just living an individual life, one of 7.5 billion, if the Pleiaren are correct.
Is the contact with Meyer still going on?
Yes. The last one I know about was September 9th. We'll get to that. I promise to tell you what's in that before the end of the show because it'll upset a lot of people, so I'd prefer to wait.
Okay.
But I want to be able to, if it's okay with you, I'd like to go into items that just happened. Let me recap it this way. We have five categories of what remain still irreproducible physical evidence. We know the skeptics have been unable to duplicate it. No one has come forward. And that alone should be enough for most people to say, hey, this is real. We don't know what it means, but it's real. But I'm going to actually suggest to you right now the thing that I call the higher standard proof. If there were no photographs, films, video, sound recordings, or metal samples that have been analyzed, if none of this existed, the higher standard of proof is compelling enough to let us know this is authentic. And that higher standard of proof is this. For the past 30 years, Meyer has published, and I have to use this term, prophetically accurate scientific and world event-related information given to him by these people for 53 years. He was told to hold back and many times to not publish things until certain times. And we can always ask about that, but that's their agenda. This week, this past week, four separate events, four separate news stories made the headlines. And I mean Drudge, BBC, Frontline, and another website, and websites all over the world. These four items, in addition to the things that Meyer had already predicted, such as the U.S. attack on Iraq, the increase in Islamic terrorism that was going to follow, the appearance of SARS, the spread of mad cow disease.
Where was all of this documented, Meyer?
Well, you know what?
What?
Hold on to your horses, Art. It's sitting on your bookshelf. When we sent you originally back in about 2001, the first book, And Yet They Fly.
Right.
On pages 347 and 355, et cetera, these things are in there. But that's not their first publication, even though each of them in that book with that copyright date is in the book before they happened. Some of that information was written in 1995, all the way back into the 70s. This is ironclad proof. You can't go back. I can't run over to your place in Pahrumph, pull that book off the shelf and take out the things I don't like and stick the ones in that I do and then say, see?
That's right.
Art, I want the people at home to listen to this. And I just will tell you, you can see a lot of this for free. I've set my website up and my newsletter for free that people can get this information enough that they can check it out. If people want the other stuff, that's great. I love it. There's DVDs and books and all that. That's my pitch on the products. The rest of this is free. Find out. Now, that book that has that information, those documents were first published years and years and years ago. On the information pertaining to the U.S. attack on Iraq, the increase in Islamic fundamentalist terrors, the spread, the appearance of SARS, mad cow disease spreading, renewed concerns about chemical warfare and weapons, and here's one so specific and so unique, the threat of an avoidable accident at the nuclear power plant near Lyon, France. That was in writing in 95. I downloaded it in 98. It's in the book from 2001 that you've got. That last event, August 12, 2003, the nuclear power plant near Lyon, France made the news that they vented off the hot water, whatever the heck it was, and they caught the accident before it happened, as Meyer says specifically in that book, and in the new edition of the book, it's still in there too. Now, we have this week. That's just a few of the things that I've documented. There's an article on my website, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I've got 60 of these. Now I've got four or five more to add to it. And here's what happened. Superquakes and volcanic eruptions tied into petroleum extraction. Now, if people go and if they want to follow along, I've set it up so my website, my little friend who does my web work for me today.
They'll be able to follow along.
They can follow
program.
Along. Yep. It's theyfly.com.
Yep.
T-H-E-Y. You know, and there's a link from your site. Thank you. On the front page, there's a line that says, scientists confirm Meyer's information 30 years later. If they click on that, they're going to get to a page called Breaking News, where we not only have all the PDFs, we've got some of this stuff that I've been talking about where the documents already exist, and I even put some of the quotes in there.
Indeed, he does have all of this there. I'm looking at a PDF right now.
There it is.
Called Indonesian Tsunami, probably tripped by, then it gives a name of an oil company.
Yeah, we don't have to lambast. All the oil companies are involved, so who cares to pinpoint somebody right now?
So your contention is, or Meyer's or theirs, that the Indonesian quake came from pumping oil.
If they click on the link that says Payaran Earthquake Warning from 1976, and that's right there and it's easy to find, they're going to find a document from an article of mine, which is called When Will We Learn? In there, I quote the Contact 45 from 1976. Now, I first read this in 86 when I got the contact report, so I've had this for a long time, and other people, of course, have had it even longer. If you scroll down through there, and by the way, let me just say right now, when people read the rest of Meyer's stuff, this is going to offend you. It's going to offend you if you have strong political beliefs, if you have strong religious beliefs, if you've got strong anything. There's plenty here. He's an equal opportunity offender, and so are they, because they're not diplomats. They tell it like they see it. It's either true or it isn't. We like it, we don't like it, is irrelevant to the truth. But in this document, I have bolded, let's say, 60 through 62 sentences. And for those that don't have the Internet, I'm sorry. Just follow along as best you can with this. There are also further boldings where they talk about the consequences ultimately of this and how the shifting of weight takes place inside the Earth. And they mention here the creation of gigantic lakes by damming. I've bolded this because the article, this new article on the tsunami, mentions this talk of the dangers now of large dams creating earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, this is 1976. Look at this document. It wasn't written yesterday. It wasn't written in time to come on the air tonight. Okay?
In what manner, Michael, are these things unfolded and known to Billy?
They are told to him at the discretion of the player, and under certain circumstances, there's certain things he is not allowed to publish. He may transcribe them, but not publish them until after.
What I mean is it a movie? Is he shown these things? Is
he's
it telepathy?
I see what you say. Okay, well, let me explain it like this, Art. He has, as we said before, face-to-face and voluntary contact. Some take place in his office or in a forest, or they take place in their ships. The transcript, if you look and read that transcript, you're going to see that it's a conversation, though it's mainly one-sided, most of what I've transcribed there, because this is the information she's telling him. Now, he will ask questions very often. Well, what about this or what about that? You know, like this starts off with his question about the mining of ore. And she goes into this, and that leads to this whole thing about how the dangers are created for our planet. Now, he will then, and I cut off at certain points and come back to some quotes or explanations, but we have, there's thousands of pages of this. Most of it's in German. We only have about 2,000 to 3,000 pages translated into English. There's a brand new book coming out, and if anybody's on my website, you know, join my list, I'll send out a notice to people within 4 weeks. A dynamic, phenomenal book that's only been available in German with the digitized photos from Meyer plus texts. And it's a beautiful thing. Okay, let me get back to the point at hand. They tell him this stuff. In some cases, they take him and show him future events as they occur. Here's a controversial one. It's not what I was going to talk about tonight, but here it is. In 1978, allegedly, they took him forward in time to an earthquake that had not yet and still has not yet occurred in San Francisco, a big West Coast earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
He was allowed to take 11 photographs of San Francisco at that time. Wendell Stevens, who I'm sure you know of, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, who was investigating this case starting in about 78, was in the kitchen with Billy when the photos came back from the shop in the little village where he sent them away to get developed. Billy does not make his own development. It's not a model-making Photoshop opportunity in 1978. When Wendell and about 6 or 7 other people were sitting around the kitchen table, Billy passed the photos around, which was something he was not supposed to do. But Wendell saw them, and at the time, in 78, he described what he saw. He said, the Transamerica building, the top pyramidal shape, has a crack running down across it diagonally. I think he said, and I could be wrong, that this had fallen to the ground, but if not, it was very cracked. He said the streets were very bad there. He said, but what struck me was, the cars don't look anything like the cars of today, for the windshields are sweeping up into the roofs, and the cars have a more rounded appearance for the most part. Now, all I ask you to do is, at some point, turn on your TV or open a magazine and start looking, if you haven't looked out your window or if you don't already own one, what the development of the windshields and cars and roofs are. Now, is that true? Is it going to happen? I don't know. But basically, to fundamentally answer your question, they will tell him these things just like in that document there, or they will take him and show him some things, but that's rare. He just doesn't go flying around in time and space to find out everything. The weird thing is that which he's published and published in advance, and I've researched, and other people who've even tried to disprove it have researched, he's published this stuff before the events occurred or before any other source has discovered the things that are new discoveries. So if we're on this page here about the tsunami and the earthquake and all of that, you can see, hopefully so, and you can read that document from 1976. They explain the dynamics by which this happens, and they warn that we will have increased frequency and intensity of these tectonic, geographical, I don't even know the right word here, land and earth change type of experiences. They also long ago, as far back as 53 and 56, told them about the climate changes, the storms, the weather patterns that were intimately connected also to the atomic bomb explosions, underground and atmospheric. And they are also connected to to the petroleum extraction and the imbalance, tectonic imbalance, and how this whole interplay, along with the, you know, the decimating of forests, we are bringing upon ourselves these things to a large degree. And nature is going to be certainly cooperating with giving the effect to the cause that humanity has affected.
All right. Michael, I want you to hold it right there. When we come back, I'm going to read you some criticism of the Meyer case and let you deal with that, all right?
Sure.
All right, stay right there. And believe me, I do have that. Check the internet. It's all over the place. But I thought I'd let those of you who haven't heard it hear it coming right up.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Michael Horn is here. He is the official, I guess, worldwide or at least U.S. Representative for Billy Meyer in Switzerland, the famous contactee. I don't think abductee would be the right word, contactee. And in a moment, I've got some criticism that was sent to me by one of my listeners asking me if it's true or if any of it's true. Richard says, Art, is there any truth to this report? Will you please ask him about it during sometime during your Saturday show? Well, in a moment, Richard, I'm going to do that. It's a posting on the Internet by something called Underground Video Inc. In a moment. Since we have the American representative for Billy Meyer here, it seems an appropriate time to read this. The following is a statement from Underground Video Inc. I don't know who they are, about the alleged photographs and stories of Billy Meyer concerning the Pleiadian visitors he encountered. Billy Meyer exposed! Exclamation mark. Recently, Underground Video has begun an in-depth inquiry into the most sensational UFO case in history. Our investigation first began as a supportive effort to verify the known facts of the Meyer case, to present the truth of alien human contacts to skeptics. With the assistance of members from the Hollywood special effects team of the Ultra Matrix Corporation, we studied the Meyer photographs and claims made by Meyer's Talmud Manual Genesis 3 publishing, Light Years by Gary Kinder, The Pleiadian Connection by Randolph Winters, and the movie Contact. We also spent considerable time tracking the claims of computer expert and Ph.D. Jim Dilatelso, as well as claims made through Michael Hessman and Guido Moosbrugger from a Meyer's Figu, F-I-G-U cult in Switzerland. After 6 months of intense inquiry, with the assistance of cinematographers, physicists, computer analysts from Total Research, we found the claims of the representatives of the Meyer case to absolutely be untrue. We discovered miniature models, a variety of deceptive methods used to create this hoax. Additionally, an undercover hidden camera investigation penetrated the Meyer cult in Switzerland, revealing irrefutable scientific evidence of fraud. Underground Video was one of the foremost defenders of the Meyer material. We are disappointed to now learn the entire case is a hoax. Representatives of any authenticity, representations rather, of any authenticity with regard to this case made by alleged scientific examination have proved to be totally unreliable and misleads the general public into believing a carefully fabricated lie. The persons who authenticated the Meyer case are not credible scientists nor investigators. Any previous representations of authenticity of the Meyer case in the Underground Video catalog should be ignored. Our findings will be presented to the Attorney General for possible prosecution for a consumer class action for fraud. It goes on, along with Underground Video's statement is a photograph showing one of Billy Meyer's alleged Pleiadian beam ships taken in 1981 after computer enhancement and careful scrutiny. It has been shown the beam ship is really a miniature model made out of an upside-down cake pan, disconnected copper hose fitting, a bracelet, carpet tacks, and various other unidentifiable or identifiable objects. The Meyer photograph of the beautiful Pleiadian alien Sumyasi turned out to be a photocopy of a model from a Sears catalog. Another one of Meyer's photographs, where he allegedly traveled into the future aboard a Pleiadian beam ship to photograph the aftermath of a 9.0 earthquake in San Francisco, showing the toppled Transamerica building, turned out to be a realistic-looking painting from a Geology magazine article about earthquakes. On top of these damning examples, every single one of Billy Meyer's photographs of Pleiadian ships have been shown to be of third, fourth, and even fifth generation photographs of photographs. This means he likely airbrushed suspension wires and other signs of fraud. There is not one example of an original first-generation Billy Meyer photograph. On top of that, it has been shown that the reflections on some of the Pleiadian ships are not consistent with the position of the sun, indicating possible superimposition techniques. To top it off, a reporter found a bunch of miniature models exactly matching many of the Pleiadian ships shown in his photos. His ex-wife has come out to denounce him as a fraud. The evidence is overwhelming that the whole Billy Meyer story is unquestionably, absolutely, completely, and totally 100% bogus, case closed. Billy Meyer and his cohorts have made a lot of money out of this scam. I applaud Underground Video for seeking the truth about the Billy Meyer scam and disassociating itself from any involvement with Meyer. Billy Meyer has done more to hurt the legitimate field of UFO research than any other person alive today. It's really a shame. Signed, Michael Taylor. There you have it.
Yeah. Well, I guess I better represent something else, Art, right?
Oh, I'm sure you would. Yes.
Okay. Let me inform you of a few things, and then as long as I can cover the other stuff, I'll be glad to do this.
Sure.
I'll do this quickly, but if people, you know, if you ever want me to give you a sentence-by-sentence refutation, I'll do it. But here it goes. This is a very, very old document. There was never a lawsuit filed. I have looked up, and you can look up on the Internet, too, and try and find underground video. I don't think they exist any longer. Ultramax.
Well, the document is there. I checked before
I read it. The document. I have it in front of me, the document.
Okay.
I cannot find underground video any longer. They were around with the video company. Ultramatrix, I haven't found anything about this. But let's go through this kind of quickly.
All right. Good.
Oh, my goodness. Where do we start? Well, we'll start somewhere near the top when he speaks about a Hollywood special effects team. Well, it just so happens that 6 months ago, I went to an Academy Award-winning special effects company in L.A., and I promised not to reveal their name until they either do or do not attempt duplication. But here's what they said I could say. I showed them Meyer's photos and films. And by the way, these people won an award for multimillion-dollar science fiction special effects with spaceships, so you might be able to figure out which one it was. I showed them the photographs and films. I said, can you duplicate these? They said, if we can, we will need computer-generated imagery. I showed them the film clip that the skeptic said was an easily duplicated hoax. I said, is this a model where they scratch the negative, as the skeptic said? And they laughed at me, and they said, of course not. That's way beyond it. I said, are these films and photographs not, as I assume them to be, of better quality than any commercially produced film, sci-fi, UFOs, and spaceships made up to and including the date of Myers? They said there's no doubt about it. Whoever did the Ultra Matrix Corporation has never come forward to refute it. Now, this is, let me jump one by one here, but I don't want to miss the other points I'm here to do. Basically, they say they had a hidden underground camera investigation, and it's revealing irrefutable scientific evidence of fraud. Will somebody please bring that forward? Why didn't they help out the poor, helpless skeptics at CFI West when you booted them off the air because they couldn't even duplicate with 21st century technology what Meyer was doing in 1975 with no computers, no Photoshop? I'll hit you a couple other things here. There were models here. They were made by the investigative team of highly reputable investigators led by Wendell
Stevens. All right, so what reporter found a bunch of miniature models?
Well, you tell me. They won't name anybody here.
They won't name anybody. All right, DeHasio's wife, in fact, denounced him.
Yeah, but you know what she did?
No.
She did it after she made a videotape affirming the validity of the case and after she passed lie detector tests with 15 other people. So this is a case about human beings. They were married for 30 years. She had no peace probably for most of the time because the world traipsed through her living room and her husband's running off in the middle of the night.
All right, the 9.0 earthquake in San Francisco.
Right, what they're talking about there, that picture?
Yes, they said that is a realistic-looking painting from a geology magazine.
No, because what Wendell Stevens saw wasn't that. Their explanation is this. Wendell saw the photographs of that. Later on, there was in that magazine, there was that painting. What Meyer was told was that just like the ET's pulse impulses of scientific discoveries and other things to screenwriters, scientists, people, and all of that, that information was put into our cosmos, and somebody did a rendering of it. But that isn't what Wendell was talking about. He saw 11 photographs.
All right. A moment ago, you talked about digital photographs.
Right.
Are these photographs of photographs?
No, I will have to defer on the exact technology of it. There will be a new book where many of the photographs that we've seen were digitally enhanced. They weren't altered. By the way, there are no strings and things in Meyer's photographs. And I'm happy to do even an hour on the evidence in the case.
Okay, well, I think they said that the strings and things, as you put it,
were
airbrushed out, is what they said.
Meyer doesn't have airbrush equipment. This is 1975 to 78.
Okay.
In Santa Clara, California, in August of last year, I met a man who did work for Cal Corf, this debunker that they are relying on.
Oh, I know Cal well.
Yes, I know you do. He has been thoroughly discredited. He has to apologize to you as a public liar and defamer. James Deardorff and Jerome Jansen have links on my website where they shred everything he said. Now, just for the sake, if I may, and I'm not going to back away from, I'll defend all the physical evidence.
Okay.
But what we have here this week, there was on Frontline, the Al-Qaeda threat to Western Europe. That's a very specific thing that was reviewed and mentioned in Frontline. They had an article on the Internet. We have that that PDF that people can read. Meyer was warned about that as long ago as 1981. It's even in the 1987 Enoch prophecies, which I brought back in German language from Switzerland in 2002, therefore free, available on my website as a link from the book, And Still They Fly. All of this stuff is in the DVD before it happened. So just if you folks want to teach anybody a lesson, here it is. Okay, that's on the stuff relating to that. Then we've got the animal-human hybrid controversy.
Yes.
All right. On that PDF, and I'm speaking fast just for the sake of time, if you go down three paragraphs, in Minnesota last year, that's 2004, researchers at the Mayo Clinic created pigs with human blood flowing through their bodies.
That's fact. I know. Yes.
Darn specific, isn't it? Well, if you look at my page there where I have the quote, and I've got to just bring it up myself so I can see it, we have from Meyer, and this is from 1995. I downloaded first 98. It's in your book, Art, sitting on your shelf, Human-Animal Hybrids. And it talks right there, blah, blah, blah,
yes.
blah. So-called semi-humans whom they will produce by crossing humans with pigs.
All right. Have you looked into who the Underground Video Inc. was?
I tried to. I searched on the Internet. I can't find them.
So they're just gone.
Yeah, but they're welcome to come forward. They can accuse, you know, take me in front and debate it with me.
Have you tried to find Michael Taylor?
I could not get anything specifically on a Michael Taylor. But hey, Art, right now you've got 5 million people around the world. If Michael Taylor and Underground Video are listening, fellas, go to my website. It's real easy to find me.
Well, no, get a hold of me.
Fine.
And then I'll have them on with you, and you can meet them. And
absolutely.
We'll find out what's what.
I'll be happy to do it, and I promise to come.
I do think, you know, the weight is on them. In other words, they really need to produce the evidence that they're talking about here because it doesn't seem to be producible elsewhere.
It's pretty hard when you've got CFI West and the amazing Randy backing down, failing to meet the challenge, and now claiming the case isn't a hoax. How are these guys going to back it up? Well, maybe they're going to be very inventive.
But exactly where did the amazing...
Randy retract it?
No, where did he... where did all this come up, and how did it come up?
I entered into a debate, if you will, with all the professional skeptics. Michael Shermer from Skeptic Magazine, the amazing Randy, Vaughn Reese, all these guys. And on one of their pages, IIG.com or something like that, there must be 30 or 40 email exchanges. And in there, Randy, in I think it was like March of 2002 or something, or 2003, I don't have this in front of me, he says, the Meyer case is a farce that a child could see through, and blah, blah, he goes on and on. Well, after you boot the guys off the air from CFI West, I think it's April of 2003, he claims he never said the Meyer case is a hoax, so he must have misunderstood me.
Oh.
Well, you know, to me, that's a retraction, folks. He didn't write the check. I'm not waiting for it. I know Billy isn't. But, you know, come on, take us on. Show us the big hoax here. But just so I do this and make my case for you and your listeners, and people can now do this for themselves, scientists confirm mad cow disease in goat.
Oh, yes.
Okay, and you see the article there. It's in the news. Now, I also gave another link on my website to another guy who's a vegan or something or other, a scientist, who shows the connection. So when you talk about BSE and CJD, you're talking about the same thing, scrapey, whatever you want to call it. Well, on page 347 of the book that's sitting on Art Bell's bookshelf and thousands of others around the world, there is the document. And Meyer has already said the spread of mad cow disease to other animals and humans. Mm. It's one of those six specifics kind of sequential things that was going to happen. It happened, and there we go. Now, it's also gone into other animals like deer and moose and elk and what have you.
And there are those, though, who would say, well, it was going to happen. I mean, almost everybody knew that something like that was
happening. Yeah, but guess what? Everybody, you know, people always say to me, well, anybody could have guessed this or that. Now, the fact is that not anybody did, and all of these things that Meyer, who else did it? Now, on the same page where I've got this information on my site, you'll see a PDF for the 249th contact. If people open up that PDF, what they're going to see is a document which is going to offend, again, it's going to offend a lot of people, but so be it, because of all the things that are said in there. But right in the middle of that contact, they talk about this, you know, the prion disease and the CJS, and all this stuff, and even, this is one of the ETs, talks to Meyer about the specific temperatures that we are not even yet treating this animal products with to destroy the prions, and how the incubation period, this is 1994, 11 years ago.
All right, in the interest of time,
surely.
If we do not change current policies, then Meyer has forecast certain things to come, right?
Yes.
Let's cover those very quickly. What is ahead?
Okay, well, let me just take a breath here on this one, because this is, it's hard for me only because I live here and you live here and we're all in this together.
That's right.
And this is, just let me say it, and everybody that wants to be mad about it, you can be mad. On September 9th of this year, and let me also go back to say that on my web page, there is a Billy's Documents page where you will find documents from Meyer from about 2001 or so.
Gotta hurry here, Michael.
Huh?
We've got to hurry.
Okay. They already forecast that if the U.S. launches these wars of aggression, we will get a third world war. It will be precipitated by the irrational policies that are running the country known as the U.S., Great Britain, and he's also talked about 15 others. So for those that want to say it's anti-American, it's anti-many people. But specifically, they have said, and this is the other part, September 9th, when they told him in advance, once again, George Bush will be reelected fraudulently. There will be votes that have been kept back in computers in key states, 400,000 votes. There will be the death of Yasser Arafat before the end of November.
Okay, you're going back to things that happened. I want to stick with
so
things
saying,
that are going to happen.
Right. If the policies do not change and if we allow the current administration, its agenda, to launch worldwide wars, unprecedented destruction, devastation, and annihilation as never before experienced on the planet Earth will befall not only the planet, but specifically the United States of America under the mad direction of the current policymakers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people will interpret that as a definite attack. And then hurricanes, firestorms?
Yes.
Weather weapons?
Weather weapons, laser, computer, biological, all of this. They've said, folks, this will come to you if you do not rise up against this.
So you're going to get a lot of angry emails.
Yes, here. I know. But I would just say to the people, everybody's already said, Billy's anti-American, I'm anti-American for reporting. Here's my bottom line, Art. It's either true or if it's not. If it's not true, flush it and forget about it. If it rings true, if you can investigate this and see there's 53 years of credibility and these people are trying to tell us, warn us, you're on the wrong path, then I'm a guy walking down the street at night saying, your house is on fire. You can stay asleep. You can wake up. You can call the fire department. You can put it out. You can do whatever you want. But I have to yell about it.
All right. For those that are already yelling into their email, you have an email address, right?
Oh, yes.
Well,
just come to the website. You can take your shots at me. It's theyfly.com. theyfly.com. Everything, just about everything tonight, is already on a two-hour video that we produced. It was in production in 2003. The books have had it for years. They're available. Read it for yourself. Get informed.
Michael, is this how you make your living?
No. I mean, it's helping, but no. As a matter of fact, I had created a fitness program, especially for people who are seated a lot. I work with seniors. My oldest student was 103.
Okay, that is not your main business.
No, I hope to make it. I want to go around and lecture on it. But here's another thing, Art. I'm coming out, just so you know, and I wasn't even going to mention this. I come out in a month with a song album of 12 songs. I've written
a song album. Michael, I got to go. We're out of time.
I love it. Thanks,
Art. Take care. That's Michael Horn, the American representative for Billy Meyer. And remember, if you want that email address, to finish that email, I know you're writing, is on his website. We've got a link up there to his website. We'll be right back.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to come.
Just go me. Ride,
take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I have always, always been fascinated by weather. When I was in the Air Force, stationed at Amarillo Air Force Base in Texas, Lynn Whitlake, who I've actually had on the show and myself, used to pack ourselves inside a little Volkswagen and chase tornadoes and take video and peddle it to local TV stations and stuff. And, you know, we would chase them sometimes all the way up into Oklahoma. So we were pretty crazy and pretty wild about violent weather. Scott Stevens has been fascinated himself with weather since he began keeping a weather diary for a scouting merit badge. That would have been a long time ago now. A year later, he was reporting conditions in his small town in Idaho to the area TV stations. By his senior year in high school, he was working at KIFI-TV, the NBC affiliate in Idaho Falls, as a studio camera operator, then as a photographer for the news department. Scott went on to the University of Kansas to study meteorology. During his sophomore year at KU, he auditioned for an opening at KTKA in Topeka. And 5 months later, he in fact landed a job. However, it cost him twice as much to keep the job as it paid. Typical beginnings in broadcasting. But 13 months later, he had gone from a 2.5-hour, 5-day-a-week job to being the main guy. That can happen in broadcasting, too. Not long afterward, a phone call came from Omaha, Nebraska. That would be RFD-TV. He also spent a year in the Capital District of New York as the chief for WRGB. In 1996, returned home to eastern Idaho, where he does weather on KPVI-TV. So he is a TV weatherman. Is that fair to say, Scott?
That's a fair assessment. That's what I get up and the people watch me to do. It's a great job, Art.
Being a TV weatherman, here's something I've wondered about a lot, Scott. Mm-hmm. Do you mind? I've always been curious how much homework and how much prep time a TV weather guy has to put in.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, you only do, like, what, 3 or 4 minutes on the screen at best?
3 or 4 minutes, 3.5 is what they tell us. I usually get away with taking about 4.
Okay, so maybe...
That really annoys the producers, but they'll get over it in time.
Maybe 4 minutes.
Maybe 4 minutes.
That's not a lot of on-camera time. How much time is required? I mean, is it like a full-time job?
Oh, it's definitely a full-time job, because what you need to do is spread out across the course of the day. And thank you for the Internet and the ability to access so much information from home. You can go to work essentially prepared for the day's tasks. And you finalize, and the last minute data comes in, you know, in the 2 to 3 hours prior to showtime. But essentially, you've got a very good handle on what's happening during the course of the day. Now, there are surprises, as we're well aware of, but, 80% of the work is done before you even go in.
What is your, as a weatherman, I mean all weathermen across the country, I'm sure, have similar batting averages. They're mostly working from the National Weather Service information and so forth and so on. So it's not an exact science. We all know that. What do you think is your rough accuracy?
Oof. Well, we kept numbers, but we kept a log. Out about 4 days, I was about 3.2 degrees off on high temperatures. And that was kind of one of the red flags for me, is that accuracy began to slip, even as technology and advances in the science should have stated otherwise.
Ah.
And now at 4 days out, I'm at about 4 degrees error.
Okay, that's only the temperature. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things. There's whether it's going to rain or be sunny, whether it's going to be partly cloudy, mostly cloudy, or the sun shall shine upon us. I mean, there's all these, and then there's humidity and barometric pressure and all kinds of different variables, not just temperature, right?
That's just the one factor, exactly. And that's the one that's easiest to quantify. And so that's probably why it's done. The other is precipitation, obviously, and it's a yes or no. Did it rain, did it snow, or did it not? And so we give a range of values, 20%, 40%, 60%.
How's your accuracy? How's the accuracy? Well, that's right. That's what they are doing these days, a 20 or a 30% chance of rain instead of maybe
yes or no.
Rain.
Yeah, instead of yes or no. And with snow out here, they want to know how much. Rather than the yes or no, and that's not something that's necessarily required when we do liquid. In the warmer months, how much rain are we going to get? Well, we'll just say a couple hours of thunderstorms, and then clearing as the day moves on. But when it comes to snow, we need to quantify that, and so that adds another variable that we try to nail down.
Okay.
Sometimes with success, and sometimes not so much with success.
That's right. Well, you're just not your everyday weather man. I mean, look, most weather guys, TV, radio, or whatever, if you were to ask them about weather modification, they'd go, give me a break, weather modification, science fiction, baloney.
Where's the silver iodide so we can go spray the clouds and do the cloud seeding?
Okay, you began to see an error in what you predicted or the National Weather Service did and what, in fact, happened at any... Somehow or another, you began to think the weather was being manipulated. Is that correct?
Well, it was instance after instance where, and it goes back to the winters of 97, 98, and 98, 99, where across the entire country, there were just big struggles in forecasting winter storms any farther out than beyond about 72 hours, three days. And you should be able to see large events coming over the horizon. The bigger the event, the higher it's going to poke its head up over the horizon so you can see it arriving. And those two winters were just tough, Art. And so I began to think that, you know, something's amiss. And that alone opened my mind to go look at some of these fringe websites when it concerns anomalies showing up in the weather.
All right, some of the viewers of KPVI are probably listening right now.
I hope.
Have you ever mentioned weather modification or weather control on your TV show, doing the weather?
What I'll do is point out anomalies that show up within the satellite or radar imagery, because it becomes very easy to spot them once you know what to look for.
Right, but you dare not actually say it.
Just last month, you point out square clouds, large square indentations.
Square clouds.
In cirrus overcast across Nevada. And that affected how we, well, the amount of snow we got out of a particular storm.
Square clouds?
Yeah, square clouds.
Do you have pictures? Do you have pictures of square clouds?
Oh, and I'm sure a lot of other folks do, too. And
well, I don't.
You don't?
No,
you
I don't. Do. Are they on your website?
They're on the website. They're on the website.
I'm on the way.
And that's weatherwars.info.
I'm there.
And you know, enough.
Show me to a square cloud.
Let's go to the best squares. There's a we've got the navigation on the web.
I see it, the best squares. All right, the best squares. I just clicked on that, and here we are.
Well, the first picture we've got up.
I see a bird.
You see a bird.
Yeah. First photograph looks like a giant bird.
Oh, I must be on a different page.
No.
Best squares and growing daily?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. Doesn't it look like a...
Could be a bird. Sometimes it's fun to just lay back in the grass and look at the clouds.
Yes. Yeah. In this case, though, we're looking for squares.
When we find hard right angles, the capital letter L shows up frequently. And from what I've been able to gather is to align or electrify a portion of the sky to get this L shape, we're actually, in fact, imparting or pushing the flat edge of the atmosphere in one direction. And then we'll tuck in the short side of the capital letter L, and we just impart angular momentum in it. And it's just a process of steering the storms. But it's there all the time.
Okay, I've been going down the page. These are very interesting.
You see the second picture. It looks like a carpenter square. And at the apex of the square, there's another square cloud.
Actually, it does, yeah.
Warmed off of that. And these are just regular summer afternoon cumulus clouds.
All right.
That are forming. And the drier an atmosphere, the easier it'll be to spot these signatures.
These signatures mean what?
Well, and I mean because a typical cumulus cloud will form, to get a cloud to form in the first place, you need to have two ingredients. First is moisture,
mm-hmm.
and second, you've got to have warm air or lift. And as that warm air rises, that parcel of moist air will rise into cooler air. And in the process of rising and cooling off, will begin to condense.
Okay.
And there will be a point, and we call that the lifted condensation level, where you get the flat bottoms of these clouds.
Hmm.
And along that flat bottom, it's basically the cloud base. And these clouds are not conforming to that basic fundamental process of cloud formation. So to have a cloud, you've got to have lift, or if you don't have lift, then you shouldn't have a cloud.
All right.
And they're just not behaving.
They're just not behaving. Hold that thought. We're going to take our break. Hold that thought, and we will be back in a moment. Okay, out there, follow along with us. We've got the link to weatherwars.info, and I'm on the Best of Squares page. So if you're able to get to the Internet, follow along with us. If not, then let's let Scott, before the bottom of the hour, explain what it is, because that's what's important about these clouds that's not right, or that leads you to believe somebody's got a hand in all this.
Well, what's curious is that we're dealing with a gas or a fluid. And when you're studying meteorology, fluid dynamics, or dynamics is one of the courses or fundamentals of the atmosphere that you need to begin to understand.
Okay.
So you can basically forecast. You need to know how it operates. And we don't find squares showing up in fluids and gases naturally, free-flowing fluids. In the old days, we used to call cirrus clouds mare's tails, just
mm-hmm.
long, straight wisps with a bit of a curl on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have sharp hooks and turn at hard right angles in very, very short distances.
Which means what?
Which means that something is at work. Something is playing in the skies. And I didn't know what it was, and I know there are a lot of other weather people that see things in the sky, and what's pointed out to them don't know how to explain it. And so you have to begin a journey of discovery and figure out, all right, what in the inventory of technology is out there that is capable of doing this?
Oh, and well, so there are many possibilities, but I mean, I guess I want to stick with this. You know, as a weatherman, that there is something wrong, and I'm still not satisfied. Square clouds, yeah, that's not usual.
No, it's not usual. No. And let's go to the next one.
Yeah,
farther down.
Fine.
We're looking at a late July evening in 2004.
What do you want me to... Oh, further down on the same page?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
the best squares, okay.
Stick with this.
Okay.
And these squares will manifest themselves in all kinds of clouds. They can be low-level cumulus clouds, you know, alto cumulus clouds or alto cirrus, or even higher up in the cirrus clouds that we just looked at. They'll manifest themselves in all of those varieties. And... it just looks like somebody's come along and taken a stamp and just cut out chunks of these clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And for no reason at all would you expect to see these hard right angles or long...
What running. About wind patterns? I mean, couldn't high-level winds shear and do weird things like this and take something that is, you know, a normal sort of puffy cloud and turn it into something with, as you point out, right angles?
I would love to know how it's done.
So would I.
If that's truly possible, naturally, I'd like to see it simulated and somebody replicate an instance where that occurs.
Okay. How would you imagine it could be done unnaturally? If you don't imagine a natural force that could account for this, what unnatural force could account for it?
We have to begin to look at something, that's invisible. It has to be something invisible that can be displayed or put in the skies to provide these just unusual shapes. was that there had to be some kind of electromagnetics that was capable of imprinting itself on the skies.
Oh boy,
to end up with whatever intent was deemed.
So you believe an electromagnetic force could do this?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that's the only feasible answer, considering the oddities, the odd shapes that show up in the skies, and it's not just squares.
Okay, if this is true, then I would think other diligent, and I don't mean rip and read weathermen. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of those, right?
Yes.
A lot of rip and read newsmen too.
I want to hear it, but yes, there are.
Yeah. So other diligent weather guys or gals like yourself would have noticed this, have they?
I think they have. And I think as time evolves and this information becomes more widespread, there will be a lot of, well, I wondered what that was going on in the weather departments around the country and around the world for that matter.
Well, maybe there are now, and it's just something that most weathermen would be really quite afraid to approach as a subject. I mean, to even hint that there's a manipulation going on in our sky.
I agree. I fully agree. And it has taken me 6 years to come to that conclusion and have a certainty about it to be able to be here on the phone with you tonight. I mean, a lot of things have had to happen for me to end up here tonight.
Well, I'm sure they have. Have you had conversations with other meteorologists, other people in your position? Yes?
Certainly. And it's fascinating to go through and, number one, bring up the topic in the first place, which I enjoy doing, and seeing what the reactions are. And, number one, it's not possible in their mindset. It does not fall within the box that is their belief system. It just isn't there. There are, you know, ways of shooting chemicals and particles into the sky or into the clouds to try to alter a storm in that regard. But the concept of using electricity or ionization to begin to manipulate the weather has just, it's not there at all.
Okay, I'm down to May of 2004. It says, this one just made me shake my head. How's this stuff not seen by anyone with open eyes? And I must agree, this is... has very much, it just looks unnatural to me. It doesn't look natural.
You know, and I took one picture of that formation. I wish now, having gone back and downloaded the pictures from that day's trip, that I had taken a couple of more. But it's a phenomenal picture of, I don't know how you describe it. It's a central bar or a central cloud. And then there's a sharp right angle headed west on the lower end of it.
Okay, I can see a little bit, Scott, where the person who processed this photograph put a little bit too much contrast,
mm-hmm.
Brought up a little too much contrast, but it doesn't change
the shape
of the...
I bring up the contrast,
at all.
First of all, to find out what the high clouds are like beyond it, behind it. And there's actually two darker areas in the center and then in the upper left portion of the cloud where the high clouds simply aren't there. And we'll find that there are holes, pluses and minuses, where it looks like the sky has been pushed and pulled simultaneously, and that gives us a kind of symmetry.
That's a good point.
That shows up in the overcast.
So you actually, as you study this now, but most people don't. They look up and they see a rabbit or a bird like I did at first. You know, but they don't study where there are holes, where there ought not be. They don't study clouds that have unnatural formations as though something has whizzed by them or cut through them or in some way changed them. That's true.
That's true.
Most people just don't look at that, do
they? There's no reason to. There's no reason for them to because it's all natural. Right? And that's why it isn't done. And
well, that's what we're taught.
It's exactly what we're taught.
That's our upbringing, that those are clouds. That's just naturally a random formation up there. That's how we're all brought up by mommy and daddy and our teachers.
Well, and that it's a beautiful manifestation of a natural process.
That's right.
And nature is, in its perfection, is the ultimate beauty. But within that perfection, you can find the hand of man.
The hand of man.
And it's there. It's there. And it becomes obvious because it just doesn't fit in. We get...
All right. Hold on, Scott. Hold it right there. We now are at the bottom of the hour. Scott Stevens, who's a TV weatherman who is speaking out, and you don't find them very frequently. That is, people like Scott. Most TV weathermen, they would scoff at a suggestion of the hand of man in the formation of some clouds. But you really, really might want to take a look at these. We've got a link at coasttocoastam.com, weatherwars.info. See you there.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. My guest is well worth a listen. His name is Scott Stevens. He's never been on with us before. And what he's basically telling us is there's something wrong with the weather. Now, that's what he does for a living. He's a TV weatherman, just like the TV weatherman you've got there at home. He's on KPVI-TV, which I guess is in eastern Idaho. That's where he does the weather, and he knows something is wrong with the weather. And a little while ago, he said a lot had to happen for me to get here. In a moment, we'll ask, I'm curious myself, what had to happen for him to get here? Would you like... A TV weatherman who would say, hey, there's something wrong with the weather. Now, this is not exactly the norm. You just don't go out and find TV weathermen who are saying what Scott is saying. So I am curious, how did you get here? What was the process involved in getting on this program to probably make life hard for yourself?
Well, I hope it doesn't make hard. What it could do is put us all out of work. If you think about it, if things are as advanced as I now believe they are, you could have your forecast show up in your mailbox Sunday night for the entire week, and by Saturday have it 95 to 99% accurate. It's just it.
You think it is that manipulated?
Yep, I really do. I really, really do. And how I came to that conclusion was several years in the making, and just exploring other anomalies that showed up first within radar, because we get these flashes and blooms.
Oh, I know. Let's back up a little bit. I want to know how you got here. I mean, did you... You began a website. I don't think you've written a book yet that I'm aware of.
Oh, no.
But you're a weatherman, TV weatherman. So how do you get from there to Coast AM?
Very quickly. It happened in about 3 months' time, Art.
Okay.
3 months' time. It happened just that rapidly.
There must have been a first step, something you did that got somebody's attention.
I had written Art, what's his name, George Urey, his urban survival site.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little article about whether there was an imprint within the hurricanes or an intentionality within those hurricanes that affected Florida this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote back and said I believe there was, and then presented some images showing examples of this scalar imprint in the clouds, in the radar, and so forth. And he posted a page, and it has just snowballed since the second week of October.
Okay.
So it's happened very, very quickly.
All right. So is this all a result of a question that was asked of you that began this line of investigation, or were you on it before that?
I was on it before. I was definitely on it before. I had received emails from people asking about contrails. I had received pictures of odd things in the sky that you try to blame on the mountains. They're mountain wave clouds. Oh, they're this, or there's some kind of lenticular thing. Well, they didn't fall into those categories of clouds.
How do they not? Well, okay. The weather is an extremely complex system, I suppose, only explained by somebody who understands chaos theory or something.
And that's what you have to start with, is the randomness of nature.
Yes.
And then you see the imprints or the local effects of the mountains, the orographics. So we would see lenticular clouds on mountaintops, and then the echoes downstream out in the open valleys. But clouds were showing up with resonances that did not match the local terrain. Nowhere close. And even these lines would suddenly jump a half a resonance. And then where one line would end, the next one would start at basically that exact width next to it. So it's like taking four fingers and taking three and then trying to interlock them.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed the hand of man in a natural process.
And you think this is some kind of scalar technology?
There are probably other technologies that are capable of playing within the skies, but I think this is the one that is the most prevalent. And who and where and when, you know.
That was about where I was going to go. In other words, do you imagine this to be a product of something like HARP that originates on ground in Alaska? Is it a product of something being manipulated by satellite? There have been a lot of rumors of that. What do you think?
I think all are a possibility. I think we have to consider all of those options. HARP is, from my understanding, it's one antenna. And what we're looking at in the sky is a resonance or the interference patterns of many. I mean, ultimately, many, many happening simultaneously. So I believe it's far more advanced than just simply HARP. That's a wonderful toy, and I'm sure they're having fun playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But
possibly satellite. The Russians brag they can control weather, perhaps the path of a cyclone or even the creation of a cyclone by satellite.
Well, let's take them at the word and say they can. Let's take them at their word. Because you look at the storms, and as these hurricanes tend to spin up and approach a certain velocity, almost to the limit of what the atmosphere can handle, because it looks like they're being spun up again towards Category 5 and beyond, or very close to that limit, they're revealing bars, solid lines crossing the eye walls in an exceptionally high shear environment.
I did see some really weird things with some of the hurricanes that were approaching Florida. Some of the oddest things happened. For example, it actually stopped at one point, and I can't remember. It might have been in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm trying to recall this last hurricane season. One hurricane stopped in front of an island.
There were so many.
and just made a lateral path and then took off again as though it was so odd.
It was on a schedule. It needed to stop there and was waiting for the next, you know, wavelength, the next trough coming in from the western U.S. as it approaches the mid-Atlantic. Okay, let's start this hurricane up. We can have it catch this incoming cold front so we can rain out.
Yeah, I agree with you. It very much looked manipulated. But the next question, of course, is why anybody would manipulate hurricanes, spool them up to near Cat 5, and then head them into land where they're going to do a tremendous amount of damage. If we have control of the weather, then why are we controlling it to our detriment? Or is it not we that are under control?
It obviously must not be we. It must not be we. So it's someone else. You know, if this was a tool that had been invented publicly, it would have been used publicly for the public's betterment, the public's good. We would have dealt with these hurricanes, probably brought them ashore in places that needed the rainfall in a somewhat weakened state, and then provided the rainfall for those parched areas.
Yes, but that's one thing. The wholesale death and destruction that occurred in Florida in this last hurricane season, if it was manipulated by another nation state, for example, would be considered an act of war.
Wouldn't it, though?
Absolutely, yes. It would, yes.
Yes, it would. And that appears to what has happened. The other thing is, what happened after the hurricane? This economy needed a kick,
yes.
And it got one. It got one. We measure our economy, our gross domestic product, the GDP, by cycling dollars through, the flow, the movement of money.
Yes.
And this gave that economy and those areas an incredible kickstart. Yes, there were a lot of tears shed over it, but that happened.
Well, now you're telling an even more convoluted story, or the possibility of one. Now you imagine that we're doing it to ourselves.
Well, I'm not saying we're doing it to ourselves. I'm just saying it's happened.
Well, I doubt.
And that's a side benefit.
I doubt China wants to improve the U.S. economy, just as a shot in the dark.
But
here.
Ultimately, Art, is it? Because we're spending insurance company reserves. Is that healthy?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. But you sort of made the case that it stimulated the economy.
It did. And if you look at the numbers in unemployment area in the southeast part of the U.S., there was an immediate detrimental impact. And then afterwards, the administration was ballyhooing it in the November stats.
I had some fellows on last week. I hope you heard the show on HARP. Did you?
I did not.
You did not?
I did not. This is getting very close to bedtime for me.
I see. All right. Well, they made the case that the HARP project has the ability to heat the ocean ahead of a hurricane. Now, kind of like a Pied Piper, the hurricane would follow the warmest waters.
Sure.
Was their contention.
Sure.
So they could just sort of Pied Piper a hurricane along where they wanted to go by heating the first little bit of the ocean, the top layer of the ocean, artificially.
You're certainly priming the environment for the arrival of the storm. That's what that process would do. You only have to increase it a degree or two, and it makes a wonderful, I mean, it's a big difference.
Do you have any, is there any way to guess from looking at the effects where the technology would have to be coming from?
From my understanding of this technology, it could be coming from anywhere. It truly could be coming from anywhere, since these waves are capable of being transmitted through solid objects. They're not attenuated by solid mass, so they can be focused above and beyond or through the Earth. It can be done from the moon, for all that matters. It's happening. And what we need to do is recognize that it is and begin to demand answers.
Of whom?
We need answers. It puts us weathermen in a rather precarious position because we're looking at data. We're analyzing what's happening, and there's a missing delta. There's missing information that is not going into the computer models that we need to get accurate forecasts, and that has got to be rectified. And you've got to wonder about the guys back in D.C. or in Silver Springs, Maryland, where that originate much of the information that we look at, if they're aware of it. And my feeling is that they just have to be. And you could read between the lines in some of their technical discussions, that's things are going on. When they discuss 3 and 4 standard deviation from normal events.
By the way, a much more mundane item, but the National Weather Service recently sort of overhauled the entire U.S. weather reporting system. And I must say, it's the most screwed up mess I've ever seen in my entire life. In fact, the weather forecast for our area, as called up by zip code, ain't even close to right.
No, it's awful. It's an awful automation process. And that's what they've done, is just try to automate it. And it's really bad. And the Mets that have to put out these grid points as they talk about it don't like it either.
Well, I called the National Weather Service because I read the weather for my local, my station, KNYE. I read every night, I read it. And I finally picked up the phone and called the National Weather Service in Las Vegas, and they said, we don't know what the hell they're doing in Washington. Yeah. So here's a page you can go to, and as I've got a special page I can go to, but they've really got it screwed up, the whole national system.
And something else that they have to do is blend, say, Vegas's forecast with Salt Lake's at the interface of southern Utah.
Sure.
Or with Flagstaff in northern Arizona.
Sure.
And if you've got a forecaster in Flagstaff who doesn't like what the guy in Vegas is doing, they have to hammer out an agreement on those bordering counties.
I see.
And it's not pretty. So one guy can be right and one guy can be totally wrong, but because they have to come to some agreement, they'll both be wrong.
Well, here's what I see. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a weather nerd, so I read what's called the forecast discussion. And in that forecast discussion, Scott, many times they're looking at, for example, two or three different computer models, and they're trying to make some sort of forecast out of models that are not in agreement with each other about what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And those models can be in disagreement in as soon as 6 and 12 hours from when they were initially run. And you shouldn't see those separations, that delta, that difference between the two, showing up until you're 2 and 3 days out. But it shows up sometimes immediately. Hmm. And oftentimes, even the initializations. So your 0 hour is bad. And so what does that mean? That means you've got to wait for 6 hours or 12 hours before you can run the whole thing over again and try over. So this is information that has to be incorporated within these model suites. And it has to happen soon. Because the poor guys back at the Hurricane Center are just pulling their hairs out. You know, and people evacuating when they don't need to evacuate.
There was some of that, yes.
There was, and that's an expensive proposition.
I guess there are some weathermen who know, like yourself, and then others who don't. And that difference is what? The guys who rip and read and the guys who really study weather? Or what is the difference? Do a lot of people like you know?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think it's they're very certain of what's happening. They're very certain of their belief system, of what they've been told. If this was happening, it would have come down in some technical bulletin. It would have been presented, or somebody would have done a paper, and it would have been published. Those kind of things would have happened. And it hasn't. And that's how typically information gets within the scientific community. Is somebody goes out, does the research, brings it back, and publishes it. And then sometimes it's peer-reviewed and just doesn't get in at all.
You've got a website up. What's the peer review word in on what you've published so far?
If I was to do that, there would be a big debate. I figured it's just better to put the information out there and let people absorb it.
You've had feedback.
Have had feedback, and it's stunned disbelief.
The implication of that is that they're stunned at what they see, and they just absolutely don't believe what they're seeing, or they refuse to believe that.
They need time to let it sink in. And they need to go out and then see the geometry in the sky for themselves. And then that knowing happens. But it doesn't happen at once. It doesn't happen in one sitting. It has to be just slowly absorbed. Because it's a mind shift. Having the carpet ripped out from underneath you.
Then as a weather man, you just said it, a knowing. In other words, you've looked at enough of these malformed clouds to know that there's man's hand in there. Those are manipulated formations.
There's no question in my mind. There's no question. I had that epiphany back on June 7th. And when that epiphany occurred, I got sick to my stomach. And I got chills that just rolled across my body because I understood what was happening. Looking at some of this imagery, the epiphany occurred, and I knew what was happening.
Do you recall the triggering event?
Yeah, it was a satellite picture, and it was it's on this site. I'll have to dig it up here, but
I'd very much like to see that. So when you find it, we've got a break coming up pretty soon. You can direct me to it, and we'll all take a look. I would like to see that myself. But one day you just took a look at a
the geometry in a regular cold front, and it was regular. There were these odd squares at the end of the tail end of this front that just did not match with terrain. And when I saw it, I knew that if one boring little cold front in early June was being altered, then that meant it all had to be. It was yes or no. And that was the yes moment for me.
Okay. Do you think the U.S. is doing this? Do you think there are other countries doing it and we are not? We're just the victims of it? Or
no.
What?
From my understanding is that there are 20 entities, not countries, but entities.
Entities.
And there are countries included within that header. Entities that do this, and they all have their agendas. They all have their different ways of play. You give an 8-year-old boy a BB gun, what's he going to do with it? He's going to play with it. He's going to use it. And once this is, discovered, it's going to be played with. It's going to be experimented with.
And that's what's going on out there.
That's what's happening.
All right, Scott, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. A TV weatherman named Scott Stevens is my guest, and he's saying there's no question about it. It's our weather. It's being manipulated by man's hand.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
My guest is Scott Stevens. He's a television weatherman for KPVI-TV in eastern Idaho. And I must say, he's stepping out on a limb. There's no question about that. For a television weatherman to come on the air nationally on national radio and say, ladies and gentlemen, our weather is being manipulated, no matter whether it would be by us or someone else, believe me, you're walking out on a limb. On the other hand, I have this feeling that a lot of you out there agree with him. So if you'll stay right where you are, there's much more to come. You're listening to Coast AM in the night. You know, Scott, there's always a danger in speaking out. I guess you realize that, don't you?
Well, I suppose there is.
Yeah, there is. No, there is. Especially on something like this.
You know what's encouraging, Art, is that people are the ones emailing their local weathermen. They're the ones trying to get us to pay attention. And they're not. They're not. And that has to change. They need to realize that, okay, something isn't amiss, or something is amiss. I'm not as accurate as I'd like to be. Storms are not behaving. We're getting additional lift, or we're getting three tornadoes out of one storm.
Mm-hmm.
That we're having, you know, extra strong this or too many those, or the drought is not right, or, you know, clouds are moving the wrong direction. The wind field is not matching with cloud movement. There are so many things that are signs, that are red flags.
Okay, let's talk about those a little bit. Fine, let's talk about them a little bit. Clouds, you said, for example, that do not move with the wind patterns. Now, that seems impossible.
Put up time lapse. And you could verify it two ways. We call it a VAD profile. You take the Doppler radars, it scans the sky in the area, and it'll give you wind movements as it detects particles, be it moisture or birds or dust or something reflective in the atmosphere, and then you can get a good idea of which direction the winds are moving over a certain period of time. Put a camera up and look at the same area and watch the clouds grow.
All right.
And they don't match, Art. They just don't.
They don't match. Which means there has to be manipulation. There's no other.
There's some other something else playing. There's something else there, and that's the point. That's why this is happening, is that we've got to discover what that is, and everybody's got to come into that knowing or an understanding of what it is so they can do their job correctly.
You mentioned there was this moment when the light bulb went on for you. Is there anything on your website? Did you preserve that photograph?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right-click, save.
Okay. Where?
We go into visible satellite imagery. Satellite imagery under phenomena.
Under phenomena. Okay. Is that on the left-hand side of the main webpage?
That's on the left-hand side. It's the one, two, three, fourth link down. Satellite imagery.
Oh, okay. Got it. Satellite under phenomena. Okay. Satellite imagery, and I am there.
And we load many different examples. I think I've got about 12 of them on this page, and I'm looking at the eighth and ninth ones down.
One, two, three, four, five, and six, seven, eight.
It's two pictures together, and the date is June 7, 2004.
Got it.
Southern Montana, eastern Idaho, northwestern, I guess it should be Wyoming.
Okay.
What I was looking at was the cold front working through southern Montana. And
yeah, you can actually see it.
You can actually see it.
Right.
And towards the end of it, it comes to just a sharp endpoint, which is fine. It looks like a photographic a needle that we used to, well, those old archaic things called LPs or vinyl.
Right.
But you can see how the clouds are simply notched at regular intervals.
I do.
You see how about every 4 or 5 kilometers, they're just hatched. And it's the regular interval. And when you begin to climb up from the back of that cold front, there is an opening or a large square. And where that opening begins, the clouds are shifted exactly 90 degrees.
Oh, I do see that.
The cold front moves north. The clouds realign themselves north-southeast or north-south, and then the front continues on.
All right. When you're doing the weather, on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it you present these sorts of images to your audience, right?
But I haven't pointed them out.
Okay,
not all the time.
After
doing this show, I have to.
Yes.
It changes everything. And over, follow the northern border of Wyoming, and across the valley that includes Billings, Montana, there's a perfectly square cloud.
Okay.
Over towards the east central or the right central portion of the image. Do you see the square cloud and the square shadow below it?
I do.
It's almost as if it's been cut out.
In fact, actually, it's almost exactly square. That is bizarre.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there's nothing, in other words, normally, meteorologically speaking, there's nothing that would or could create an exact square cloud like that?
Not in that terrain. Not in that terrain. And that's not the only anomaly on the picture.
It is weird.
There are many other anomalies in that image that if you just sit and look at it, the geometry is just wrong. These thunderstorms are not lighting up. When we heat the afternoon day, we begin to see thunderstorms billing off the tops of mountain ridges. I mean, that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen like that anymore. They're close. They're close. But they don't have the grid that controls the weather matching the terrain just right. They're close. But you can see where they've made mistakes. And it's this way day after day after day. And after this Sunday afternoon in June, I looked at this imagery much closer and began to save every picture. And as you look at literally thousands of them, there are all kinds of shapes, symmetry, circles in circles, circles in squares, triangles inscribed in circles, circles inscribed in squares. All of these things that are far more a hyper-dimensional physics kind of thing rather than convective signature.
All right.
We would like to see.
We've been taking pictures of clouds, human beings have, since we've been able to take pictures. So it seems to me that you could go back. We might not have had satellite imagery all that long, but you could go back and see if you found things like this at a time clearly before we could have had the technology to manipulate the weather as a control for what you're claiming we're seeing here.
Exactly. And that's work that needs to be done. That's work that I'm hoping you have listeners that have access to some of these old pictures, whether they're in county libraries, newspapers. You know, these things need to be scoured so we have a baseline. What I enjoy doing is watching the History Channel, or I love Discovery Wings. I'm an airplane buff.
I'm a Discovery person, too. I love it.
And looking at World War II footage for the clouds, especially the color stuff.
Yes.
And that's at least one avenue where you can begin to see something that's normal. Because as I have delved into this farther and farther, oh, that red pill just doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on as long as I've been alive. So I don't know that I've ever seen a time when clouds were entirely natural. And it kind of leaves you a little woozy inside, knowing that what has been promoted as natural and all of these bad weather events happening and people praying to God, praying, you know, for an end to the drought, for an end to the rain.
Yes.
And it's not in that hand.
You are, in fact, experiencing a drought, I believe, in Idaho, aren't you?
Oh, we're in our sixth winter of drought.
Uh-huh.
And let's roll up on this page because there's a wonderful example, and it's the second picture down.
All right.
Of how droughts happen. And it's a simple theft of rain. We have storms come through. I'm sure the frequency of the storms is similar to what is natural. What is unusual is the intensity of the storms
mm-hmm.
that are not leaving rainfall.
Yeah, I'll sure buy intensity of storms.
Well, and that intensity is focused in very small places rather than being spread out over the western edge of the continent or the full breadth of the storm. It's focused. And so large swaths of area are receiving less rainfall out of a said storm than they would otherwise, while others will get 2.5 times normal rainfall.
All right. I'm not a weatherman, but most weather here moves west to east, generally. So if you wanted to control the weather for the West Coast, you'd be working out in the Pacific Ocean. If you wanted to control it for the East Coast, you'd probably be working with formations and systems in the West or the Southwest.
And you begin in the Pacific, and you essentially trap the jet stream. And once you trap the jet stream, and if you know and can manage, and what happens when you heat? You use this energy to heat a layer of the atmosphere. What happens when you heat a gas? It expands. And as it expands, it exerts pressure on the layers above and below. And as you gently add pressure farther upstream to guide a storm in a certain direction, you're going to limit its movement in that direction you're trying to guide it to. And it becomes a relatively simple process once you understand how to do it. And so the entire jet stream can be trapped and captured and guided. And
well, certainly, where I think even casual watchers of weather pretty much know that the big weather seems to be pushed and controlled by the jet stream. Is that an accurate representation?
Oh, sure.
It is. Okay.
In these latitudes, in these mid-latitudes, that's the primary factor in driving storms across the country and indeed around the whole hemisphere.
So where the jet stream goes, the big weather follows.
And where the jet stream disappears and you get stagnant, you get fog in the valleys, you get inversion, or you get drought. But this second picture on this page.
Is that the one marked October 17th?
That's the one.
Okay.
And in the center of the picture, there's just a parallelogram or a square, a rectangle, tilted on its side about 45,
God, I see it.
50 degrees.
Oh, I see it. So clearly I see it. And it's taken what should have been, well, that's really odd. I must admit, that's really, really odd.
Yep. And see, that should have been a continuous band of showers. And that was a Sunday afternoon where I had expected a quarter to a third of an inch worth of rainfall.
Okay, I want the audience really to get here. So let's explain once again, please. We're at something called visible satellite imagery. You go down the left-hand side of the page until you get to phenomena. And then, is that correct? And then visible satellite imagery? Yes. Click on that.
Imagery.
And the second picture down, first it doesn't hit you, and then all of a sudden, boom, there it is. It's a large, I would call it rectangular area, bereft of the weather that is all the way around, everywhere else. It's like somebody took a giant... How much land does that represent?
I think we're looking at every bit of about 110 miles long by about 60 miles wide.
Is there anything in the geography of the area, an obvious question, that could account...
I'm laughing.
Well, I'm sorry. It's
well,
the only,
no, you have
what
to,
else can you,
you
ask?
Yeah, because that's the explanation you would like to come to, is that there's a geographic, a local orographic reason for this, but there is not. And we go from west of Salt Lake, which is wide open desert, and then across the Salt Lake, across the mountains that border the Bear River Valley, and into southern Idaho, and it's fairly high terrain. And there should have been a half or greater rainfall in those mountains.
This picture has under it October 17th, 2004, 22:15 Zulu, 4:15 p.m. local, southeast Idaho / northern Utah. And I'm telling you, folks, this one I absolutely buy. Something happened here. Now, Scott, is this are we seeing actual weather control here, or are we seeing an artifact of weather control?
Either way, the
hard
effect
hard
is the
to
same.
Know, huh?
Yeah, it is hard, but you have to look at this, and it's intentional.
Yeah.
The weather is so unusual. We've had so many bizarre events happen. That 3 and 4 standard deviations from normal, which are 300, 400, 500-year events, that the weather is displaying intent. And this is just a simple example of intent being displayed in the weather.
Probably I would almost say it's impossible. What I'm looking at is impossible.
Yes. It wouldn't happen any other way.
Did you show this to your TV audience?
This was a Sunday, and I have Sundays off. So
I see.
But what we do on TV is we loop. We loop, but we loop.
That's right, yes.
Uh-huh. And so you don't see the shapes when you're animating these frames at 10 frames, 15 frames,
oh, you're
30
right.
frames a second.
You're absolutely right, and almost every TV weather person and station does that. They put it into a loop so you can see the movement of the system, but you never see the still photographs like you're seeing right here.
We forecast from the trend and not from these specifics.
Where was this photograph taken from?
This was taken from the GOES-10. The GOES-10,
okay.
GOES-10. Yeah,
we've got, I think, two GOES satellite satellites for the U.S., one for the east and one for the west. Is that correct?
10 and 12. 10 is west and 12 is east.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so there you go. And this photograph is impossible.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
There are so many, and there are these kind of shapes. When Hurricane Ivan was coming ashore, Art,
oh,
there were these squares punched out of the southern eye wall of that storm. As it came ashore in Alabama, the far western panhandle of Florida. As that storm came ashore, that whole southern eye wall collapsed just hours from landfall.
A matter of fact, we all saw it.
Yeah, we did.
We all saw it. And I can't tell you how many emails about that I got. Everybody said, that's not natural.
No. And that was this technology. And I'm kind of thinking that was our guys beating down that storm so we didn't have any more flooding than we already did up through the Appalachians. I mean, they had already had a torrential summer, and they just didn't need another storm, for goodness sakes. And so it was nice to see some of that rained out.
Well, listen, the title of your webpage is weatherwars.info, right?
Right.
Weatherwars.info. So what you're saying is, you said that was our guys, the ones that clobbered that hurricane. Now,
I'm hoping it was our guys. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm hoping.
Or it was a good deed done by somebody else. Who knows? Anyway, it was in our interest. There's no question about that.
Definitely.
And during the time that hurricane was stopping, you saw the same kind of anomalies that we see here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, as the hurricane came ashore, you're looking at an incredibly potent storm with the center. It's like being on a merry-go-round. And there's just this unusual geometry, these squares. And I think I've got that picture of Ivan as it comes ashore. When we go to the... I'm going to look here real quick to see if it's there. Yes. We go to the bottom of this satellite page that we're on. And there's a link to page 2 of the visible satellite imagery.
More satellite imagery, it says. Okay.
And this picture of Ivan is the last one on the second page.
Okay. Down I go, and there it is.
Titled September 1704, 1515.
Holy crap. I see it, folks. All right. He's got Ivan. This is as it was already on shore,
yep.
Right?
Yep. It was the next morning.
The next morning. Okay. And you have delineated in yellow the exact same kind of areas.
Mm-hmm. Where you can see just north of Atlanta.
Yes.
Yeah, where it's just been punched out.
You sure can.
And that's these guys at work.
And you think that's... All right, what would you... Assuming that with scalar technology of some sort, mm-hmm. you could do what we see right here, what effect would that have on a hurricane onshore like that?
Well, in this case, it was the function of weakening it. You're disturbing the airflow around the center to slow it down. You could have the opposite effect if you basically turn the moat around and you could stimulate the storm so it remained much stronger than it would be otherwise, because the energy is going to be dissipated within friction on the ground and the absence of its source, which is the warm ocean water. So you could replace that source of energy with this technology to keep the storm going longer than it would be otherwise. Or you can do as what we see in this case and begin to shoot holes into it.
Scott, who are we at war with?
What if it's ourselves? What
well,
if it? Truly?
Well, then that would be nothing new.
True. I mean, but we're at war with somebody. We're definitely at war with somebody.
So there's somebody attempting to manipulate one direction whilst we attempt to manipulate in another direction. Is that right?
20 entities with 20 different agendas.
Uh-huh. It was one of the military services, I can't recall which not long ago, suggested by, what was it, 2050 or some year like that, they would own the weather. That was our military. So I wonder if we've taken, you know, partial possession of the weather already. You've got to see these pictures that Scott is talking about. Then all of a sudden the light begins to go on as you see these squares, these manipulated bits of large systems. We'll be right back.
Oh!
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed. If the war is going on with the clouds over our heads, what good is it? I think the average person just following along with us this evening and looking at these images would have to agree there's nothing at all natural about what we're seeing. There is nothing natural, and I guess that's what occurred to Scott, and I hope you have been following along. If not, then when you get home, you can find weatherwars.info and look through some of these photographs that we've been looking at, and what you're going to be looking for is what we've seen, these square unnatural areas where obviously a weather pattern, in some cases a very violent one like a hurricane, has been subjected to something. In other words, there is something going on, and if it is a war, Scott, then what good is it? I mean, we have one group trying to do one thing, another group, as you put it, trying to do another, and in the end, you know,
about the potential. If you had this technology that had very nearly mastered it,
yes,
what doors would be open to you?
Most of them.
Yeah, exactly. Most of them. You would have people knocking at your door. I need this. I need that. Please do this, and so forth. But let's just look at the financial aspect of it.
Monstrous.
What if you knew there was going to be a freeze in Florida 3 weeks ahead of time?
You'd get those oranges protected or harvested, one of the two.
Or you buy orange juice futures.
I mean, whatever.
Or coffee.
That's true. Oh, that's all true, isn't it? So
and petroleum and natural gas distillates. Think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is untold potential for income when you're aware of what's going to happen well ahead of the herd.
So even not on a full global scale, but even just regionally, you could make a killing.
You could. And think of what insurance companies could do if they were to know ahead of time.
Yeah, think of it.
Yeah. It's kind of scary because this has been a topic, a subject that has just been left alone. Okay?
But let's say you made the assumption, Scott, that insurance companies that were affected mightily by the hurricanes in Florida, I mean, they were just crippled, right? So they're one of the big money people in the universe, insurance companies.
And they would want to know.
And they would want to not suffer a gigantic hit, so they would have every interest in the world, and those are considerable interests in affecting a hurricane to hit somewhere else.
Exactly. So there's going to be conflicting interests at play no matter what you do.
Well, last season, though, hurricane-wise, we saw a lot of really weird things. For example, we saw storms that were not supposed to build to the category they did in the short time between when we saw them and then when they hit land. It was short indeed, and it suddenly one of the storms suddenly built like crazy, another one fell apart.
Yeah. Was it Florence? that kind of stalled off the coast of Florida on top of Freeport.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And just became this monster 90-mile width-eye beast as she just churned in that area. And she stalled, waiting for the next storm to come in from the Rockies to scoop her up and give her the next next direction.
It's true.
Slow it down, wait for the storm to come in from the west, and then we can mate the two and have a nice little rainer along the east coast.
Uh-huh.
And you focus summer after summer of these heavy rainfalls pouring off the east coast, and then you begin to affect the ocean currents flowing northbound through the Gulf Stream. We're dumping incredible amounts of fresh water into this Gulf Stream.
I wonder if we're the recipients, for the most part, of the benefit of control of the weather or the victims.
I think we're the victims. I really do.
You do?
Oh, I do. I do.
So you obviously must feel that there are groups that don't have our, as in the U.S., best interest in mind.
I think that's the case. I really do think that's the case, because if they did have our interest in mind, we would have fewer tornado incidents per year. We would have fewer of these storms. We wouldn't be contending with 500-year droughts. We wouldn't have these big flood incidents. Poor Europe and Croatia, and they've had some incredibly violent weather.
Yes, and for the most part, it doesn't make news here occasionally, but for the most part, not.
No, it doesn't. I mean, if we had even 3 minutes nightly dedicated to our environment, we would have much greater awareness of what is happening in other lands on this planet.
Scott, where does all this fit in with, perhaps fit in or not, with global warming?
That's a big question, and I think that's one that needs some serious attention, and it needs to happen very quickly. Because of this weather modification happening,
yes.
I don't think we have an appropriate baseline to see how big or how severe global warming truly is. And indeed, is it warming at all? Because of this project. So much of the warming has happened within the last 30 years, which corresponds with the activity that's been happening with this technology.
But I sort of asked you that before, and you said, well, that's going to take a lot of research. And now you're saying that about 30 years, there's a point where you can see this technology beginning to emerge in our cloud patterns, in our climate, in our whatever, right?
We use 30 years as normals. When we go and say, all right, January 30th, normal high is 37 degrees, we compare that to the previous 30 years.
Not to
the previous 100 or not to the previous 500 years.
Okay.
So this what is normal is the most recent 30-year stretch of time.
Gotcha.
And that may not be a wise baseline to use. And when we look at the Arctic or these higher latitudes and discover incredible amounts of warming, you have to wonder if it isn't because the Earth isn't allowed to do its own thing.
Well, if you look at pictures of the Arctic, 10 years ago even, and now, or 50 years ago and now, you'll rock right back. I mean, the amount of ice gone is astounding.
It's phenomenal.
And then the southern part of the world, where a very similar kind of thing is happening with the Ross Ice Shelf, for example, may not even be stable. They're now beginning to learn. And, of course, it's above the water, so it would have great impact should it melt.
And I've read papers discussing and basically saying that much of the warming happening on the planet is not so much in the atmosphere, but more so within the oceans. And as these oceans are warming, then that heat is beginning to work into the atmosphere and hence into our daily lives through that method. And when you look at sea surface temperature anomalies, and the Navy's got some nice sights for those, the higher latitudes are consistently 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 degrees warmer than what is used as the baseline. And so that means the it takes longer in the winters to ice up. It melts off much, much quicker earlier in the season. So we are seeing warming from that happening in those higher latitudes. And that will affect the ocean currents. It will dramatically affect the ocean currents when we look longer term. Even a generation down the road, I think we're going to have to do a post-mortem on this issue. And and assign some blame.
What do you think it would take for the public to become generally aware, or the American press, that what you're showing me here tonight is the case, and in fact weather modification is going on, not laying it at anybody's doorstep, but just making that one jump, the one jump that you've made, that, hey, look, it's being screwed with.
That's why I'm here, is that I want that awareness to happen. I want some of the responsibility for the missed forecasts off our shoulders. Seriously. I mean, there is a bit of a selfish tint to that, because I'm tired of being wrong for the wrong reason.
Tired of being wrong. No, I
it's not my issue. Well, several times we had we get into the summer monsoon. It's been awfully short these summers, but we get the moisture coming up from Mexico through Arizona and Utah.
Yes.
Dew points go up in the summertime.
Oh, I get plenty of it here.
Oh,
yes.
You do.
Yes.
But these storms will not cross certain boundaries. They just, it's like they can't break out of a box. And where I live, we're on the edge of one of those boxes.
So am I.
And frequently, they approach the city and approach the city. All right, guys, you know, when you're now casting and looking at the Doppler, here it comes, it'll be 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It never gets here. And then you go outside, you look at the thunderstorm, and you begin to see this herringbone pattern as it runs into this edge of...
Of what?
I guess an electrified cube. Because what I've come to, basically just by inferring from radar and satellite information, that there's this matrix. There's the whole Earth's weather has been digitized. And we find these little squares overlaid planet-wide of various depths, of various widths. It's all programmable. It'll do what you need it to do.
Let me ask you this. NEXRAD, the NEXRAD radar system, there's been a lot of controversy about that. A lot of people claim to have seen abnormal things in the NEXRAD images, right?
I've seen them. And you have to go through, and when we're presenting those radar animations to the public, you go through and delete what we call bad frames.
Bad frames.
Bad frames, that's what they are. And so you go through and pull it out. You get a little jump, but...
Can you delineate between bad frames and abnormal frames? In other words...
You know, I've come to kind of believe that there are no bad frames. It's the information
really?
That we don't know how to interpret, or are not given the tools to interpret. That's what it is. It's data, and we're throwing it away rather than analyzing it. And...
It's kind of like people who deal with photographs of Mars and elsewhere. They complain about bad parts of strip photography and bad frames and all the rest of that sort of thing. It sounds very much like that.
So you throw out the baby in the bathtub with the picture. It's just all, we just don't even look at it. And that comes back to the animation thing. The best data, slow it down, look at it bit by bit by bit. And there's a whole different world there. It's a very different world, and I would love to be able to sit down and look at the satellite imagery like today. I would like to have seen pictures from south of Houston, outside and southeast of New Orleans. I would have liked to have seen in and around the Black Hills. The Black Hills, there's odd stuff that happens in and around there. It's like the clouds just are not allowed to form.
So there are certain areas where this is happening more than others.
It's constant, yeah.
But hotter areas, so to speak, where there's a lot more manipulation occurring, is that right?
I believe so.
And those areas would be?
Well, as I just said, today it was the Black Hills. And portions of the Texas Gulf Coast that should have been cloudy were cleared out.
So you're speaking of they being able to manipulate anywhere. I guess I was trying to ask, are there certain areas where it's constantly manipulated, or...
Everywhere.
Are they able... Yeah, everywhere.
It's an all-or-nothing proposition. You can really tweak areas, but to control the big systems, events, it's much easier to do that when you have a grasp of the entire process. And that was the epiphany that I had back in that June, is that if the small events are displaying these signatures, then the large events are as well, and that it's 24/7, 365.
Well, if they had this ability, you'd probably, as a TV weatherman, be the last guy to know. In other words, there would be motivations that would be far, far ahead of getting the weather right.
We're at the bottom of the food chain. We're a user of the data. Oh,
yeah.
Seriously, we're a user of the data. You know, and there are many other people that have far better data, far higher resolution, more frequency or more spatial resolution, where you can get time steps that are more than every 30 minutes or more than every 15 minutes. We're an end user. And so we don't get the best stuff. And the stuff that I'm showing on the website, I even have to go out and buy and subscribe to a service to be able to inspect it.
What about the management of your TV station, KBVI? Have they...
they're aware.
Have they ever brought you in? Have a seat, Scott. You know, we've... this website has come to our attention.
Oh, I made it at attention before it was up. You know, my news director is aware of it, and I'll show things to her that are unusual. I carry a camera around with me for the last three years, and I share the odd pictures. You know, when I have scout troop comes through, and we're talking about weather.
And how does your program director respond to this? You know, I mean, is it like, sure, Scott, that's cool?
The truth is the truth, Art. It is what it is.
But I mean,
whether you believe it or not is irrelevant.
When you really lay this on somebody, it's pretty seriously convincing. Let me put it that way. I hope a lot of the audience that's going to call in the next hour has had an opportunity to look at these websites,
yeah,
or this website and these photographs. Really, it's odd. And
what took me so long to come out is that when you visit the other weather modification sites and with the anomalies, there just isn't the understanding of the meteorology, those processes, the meteorology behind it. So the terminology is bad, the assumptions are bad. And that's probably what took me the 2 or 3 years to, all right, Scott, let's bring it all together. And then that just happened this fall and over the winter. But once it's laid out in front of you, we're beyond a reasonable doubt. You're beyond a reasonable doubt.
How should we proceed, do you suppose, Scott? Do we want to discover who is doing this, why they're doing it? How do you go from where you are now, knowing it is so, to finding out who's doing it and why?
That's not in my hands. It's in the hands of the listeners. They're the ones that have to get the answers. They're the ones that have to put the power behind the information. It's always in the public's hands. There's always somebody that'll come up, share some information, and that's often where we have to leave it. It's left up to everyone else to decide what to do with it. And it'll affect everyone differently. So we can't be lumped together, but it's going to have an effect. And I fully expect that it will revolutionize the weather industry. It has to. It simply has to.
So you think
we
this could be
that.
Coming from ground stations? You think it might come from satellites or from all of them?
All of it. All of it. And somebody knows. Somebody is listening tonight that knows. And that information needs to be shared with us. And that's why I'm here.
Well, Scott, these are lower systems. These are atmospheric systems. And I'm here to tell you, because I'm not an expert in anything except maybe the shortwave bands, the use of the shortwave bands. And baby, I'm telling you, there's something wrong with the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep screeching this from the mountaintops till somebody pays attention. But higher up above that which you deal with, there's something wrong with the ionosphere. Profoundly wrong, Scott.
And then how it interfaces with the magnetic system of the Sun-Earth relationship.
Right. All of that, it's complex, and I don't know. I can just tell you that watching it for all of my life, there's something wrong with that layer of our atmosphere, the ionosphere. There's something wrong with it. And it's not behaving normally, and you're telling me that either is this. Now, I wonder if what's controlling that which you see has to first come blazing through the ionosphere.
It sure could. Or have the ionosphere as a mode of delivery, you know, to get to the destination.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's an amazing field. And once you begin to understand it and see the potentials, you're just left shaking your head. Because the foundation for the science is a century old. It's been in our face for so long. And it's kind of surprising that it even took until the 50s, 40s, and 50s for the technology to be developed and then shortly thereafter deployed. But that the basics, the fundamentals, the theory has been laid down the better part of a century ago.
All right. let's try this. Where are you going with this, Scott?
I mean,
here you are on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, great. You've laid out your case, and it's a good one, I might add. But where do you go from here? Now, do you lay it in other hands now and say, here's what I found, you take it from here, or do you keep going?
What I would like to do is have the listeners send the cool pictures. Send the cool videos they've got with their mini DV camcorders.
You'll get that.
And what I would like to do is put together a DVD set of the best stuff and share it with the world.
All right, good enough. All right, hold it right there. Listeners, is what you're going to encounter when we come back. We're going to open the phone lines for Scott Stevens. He's a TV weatherman in Idaho. Now. And he says our weather is being manipulated. No question about it. And in my eyes, I think he's provided the proof. All you've got to do is go and look. If you have questions, we'll be back to deal with those in a moment.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. My guest is Scott Stevens. He's a television weatherman in eastern Idaho, and I think that he's come up with some pretty solid proof that indeed our weather is being manipulated by man. I think it's pretty good proof. I've just had a sort of a tour of it, and I hope many of you have as well. In a moment, if you have a question for Scott, that's what we're up to, coming right up. Absolutely incumbent on me to ask at least this before we plunge to the phones. Barry in Los Angeles, California, says what many do. He says, I observe a fiberglass-looking clouds over Los Angeles, resulting from what he says is chemtrail spraying. Even on hot, dry days, when no jet contrails are even possible, who is it spraying, what is being sprayed, and why? Do you, first of all, do you believe, Scott, that there is spraying going on in our skies that is not the normal contrail that we all have seen and even admired at times from jet planes, that it's more than that, that it's chemicals?
Boy, Art, I did not want to get into that area at all. Hmm. I really, really, you know, in exploring the weather modification, I didn't want to go there. And then there was one day in August where this big 747 belching just flew overhead, and there were, I've been other planes through the day, But this one was just in your face. Uh-huh. And that was it. That was, I had been exposed and had read enough and was familiar enough that I just needed to see one doing it. And I was converted.
And you did.
And I did. And now, I see them all the time.
Do you believe that to be part of weather modification, or is it just an unknown? In other words, you agree it's there, but...
I think they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't have an effect. They wouldn't be doing it if it didn't have some kind of effect in either reduce sunshine.
Point.
It could be warming the planet because we're adding an insulating blanket of cloud cover.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple things that this could do. And because it's mobile, you can deliver it at certain locations, pre-storm, post-storm, during a storm. I mean, the possibilities are endless with what is capable. And I don't know. You live out west with me.
Mm.
You know what our blue skies used to be like. I mean, how beautiful it is out here. I mean, weeks on end with just blue, deep blue.
Oh, sure.
Sky, and it doesn't happen anymore. Very few days can I say with certainty in a forecast, sunny. There are not many of those anymore. And I'll even say, and this has become rather blatant since that August afternoon, you know, we'll start with blue skies and then the contrails will generate high clouds.
Have you said that? Oh, you have?
Oh, of course, because it happens. It happens.
So we'll begin with blue skies, but later this afternoon, folks, the contrails are going to begin forming clouds.
Yep. We'll end up with high clouds from the contrails. You have to say that because that's what we do. We're observers. We observe a science, we describe the process, and infer what's going to happen from that process. And when you see day after day after day after day this process, sooner or later, it's going to hit you on the head, and you have to incorporate that in your forecasting.
All right, here we go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Art. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Where are you, sir?
I am right down the street from Scott, and Scott and I are in Pocatello, and Scott and I are up way past our bed. I'm on the other side of the camera every evening at 6 and every
okay,
night.
Listen,
a viewer then.
Listen, I zapped out your name. We don't take last names on the air, but anyway, the bottom line is you're a viewer. You watch Scott do the weather.
Yes, and I'm going to open up by saying what I know about the weather is pretty much what Scott tells me at 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock.
Like many Americans, yes.
But I do know a little bit about energy physics. And I'm not disputing anything Scott has said, but I'd like to suggest that if weather is being manipulated on a global scale, the only place you can do that from is space.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it from Earth. You might be able to use cloud seeding and 747s to change the shape of cloud patterns,
mm-hmm.
Depending on where the chemicals fall. But the manipulation of hurricanes and tornadoes. I mean, I've lived through Great Plains thunderstorms and tornadoes and was on the edge of a hurricane, and the amount of energy you're talking about is just
immense. Unbelievable. Immense.
And I just don't accept the idea that human technology is currently capable of generating the amounts of energy, either in the shortwave energy area or the long wave energy area to manipulate those kinds of massive weather patterns.
Well, caller, let me ask you this. Have you had a chance to review the photographs on the website?
I haven't. Unfortunately,
okay. Well, you
I
should.
Have.
And my question would have been, is there anything other than energy physics that could have caused the squares, the unnatural, absolutely unnatural breaks in giant formations that just simply couldn't be there other than man-made?
Okay, well, this is what I'm getting to, and considering how on the edge this discussion is already.
Sure.
I admit the possibility of straight edges in cloud patterns based on cloud seeding.
Mm-hmm.
I could see where that might show up if you did it on a large enough cloud area. On the other hand, the other manipulations I don't see can be generated by human technology. And since I've already said it would have to be manipulated on a global scale from space.
You need to do some research then into the scale
now,
of technology.
Now, well, we're talking massive amounts of energy.
Yes.
We are talking chimneys venting this energy in Siberia, and the chimneys, I mean, you leave the trail, the condensation trail to vent this power that run 90 miles long. And this weaponry has been in progress, in development, since the 40s. Basically, the Russians have been, they have spent the equivalent of 7 Manhattan projects developing this program. In concurrently with the nuclear program that we've run and they matched as well.
Okay, I first of all agree that these squares and oblongs we see, these totally unnatural slams in weather or effects in weather, it would seem to me that unless there's seeding going on, and it, you know, that was well pointed out, that could produce, I suppose, that kind of effect, but we know that seeding wasn't going on in these particular cases, or at least not publicly announced seeding.
At best, we had Hurricane Hunter planes bouncing around and diverted commercial traffic.
Right.
You know, it's a different mindset on what's capable and what is. I think if we were to be able to unfold a portfolio of technology within the variety of nations that we would call the first order of nations, and then look at events that have happened globally over the last 50 years, we would be able to do a lot of, oh, well, this one did this, and this one did this, and this one did that. But that's still secret.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Yes, all right. Great show. And, Scott, I think you're on the money. I believe the weather is being manipulated. I thought it was very interesting that the series of hurricanes over Florida happened right around election time, at which time FEMA came in and offered all of this money to help rebuild, and it looked very good politically. Mm-hmm. But the point that I wanted to make was this. If the weather, in fact, is being manipulated with the scalar wave technology, which some of Art's guests in the past have alluded to.
Certainly.
Then the question is, if we have that technology, why aren't we not using it to end our own droughts?
Yes.
And if we are not using this technology against ourselves, who in the hell is? And
Right. Can
we identify who it is, and can we retaliate?
Right, right. All good questions.
And not even retaliate, but just understand why it's happening. And this stuff has treaties signed by these nations in 1967. You don't sign treaties for something you cannot do.
Oh, that's such a good point. There are treaties about weather control, right?
And what we need...
What do they basically say? That nobody shall try and manipulate the weather for their own ends or whatever?
And what I'm curious about is the verification process.
Yes.
How do you verify this? And is it being done?
Trust but verify. Yes.
So, I mean, that's where this needs to be taken next.
Well, I mean, your point about the treaties is very good. If something was either not possible already or about to be possible, you certainly wouldn't go to all the trouble of sitting down and hashing out treaties to prevent it. Now, would you?
And that was, 37 years ago, 38 years ago?
Point well taken. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Hi, this is Gary.
Gary, you're going to have to talk up real loud so we can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, just really get close.
Okay. This is Gary from Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Yes.
This conspiracy theory just blows my mind. I believe, a few months back, were complaining about or you were bringing to somebody's attention that you were noticing electromagnetic energy around your own property?
Oh,
remember that story?
Of course. Well, that's still true. That wasn't
right.
Some...
So I say that this electromagnetic problem is all related to those solar flares that we're getting off of the sun, that this planet that is so, you know, energy responsive is getting hit by those solar flares. And that's why we're getting all these anomalies.
All right. Let's ask Scott about that. Solar flares and solar activity in general, and the sun in general, affects our weather, right?
What we're doing is adding energy to within the Earth system. That's coming off the sun. How we dissipate that, how we manage that, whether that energy is just left in the ionosphere and so it's incredibly hot all the time, whether this control method, this control that happens, may be absolutely necessary to keep the warming oceans and the attendant weather above it in check. And they're doing all they can to keep it from going even more berserk than it is. That's a possibility, that this is essentially a collar on a system that is about to go crazy because of the warming that is happening and the electricity pouring off the sun and indeed throughout the rest of the planets in the solar system. So this may be a control program to keep the weather from going any worse than it is.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Thanks, Art. Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Hi.
Good. I live here in Pocatello along with you.
Uh-huh.
Did you happen to notice the other day, it was Tuesday, in fact, the skies around 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Oh, boy. I would need to go back and look through archive pictures.
Okay. Well, what I saw was about six trails. Excuse me, that went through the skies, and I could tell that something was being sprayed because I could see where they started and ended.
Oh, and they started early, didn't they?
They did.
Early,
they did.
Early.
Now, let me throw this situation past you. If you recall, about 4 hours later during that day, they had a very large drug bust in Pocatello that involved several federal agencies. And something that I found was quite strange was that they were going to charge these suspects $4 million.
Oh, that was the potential penalty, wasn't it?
Yes. I wonder if that has any correlation with the chemtrails in the sky and the federal government.
Well,
that's a pretty big connect. How do you make that connection, Paula?
Yeah. Other
well,
than
I'm just wondering if they had that was a precursor to the drug bust. If they were spraying something in the air to manipulate communications.
Oh, I think they own the.
Think that's going a little too far.
Yeah, I think that's a connection that you can't prove.
With different agencies.
I understand people are always looking at this event and that event to try and see if they're connected, but that seems like too much of a.
Yeah. Now they were. I've set up some time lapse cameras around the house because I think in understanding how this weather works, you have to be able to speed it up. We step outside. We have. 15 seconds before we get to the car, we may get one glance up. It all looks fine.
Right.
And going back to Tuesday, it was the spraying was impressive. And
no,
it was,
you just made an awfully good point, and that is that most of us are on the way out to the car. We look up, and we get a little snapshot of whatever is going on that instant, and then we have to concentrate on traffic or whatever else is in front of us. We're not studying the sky. Very few people do that. You do that, Scott.
We are very disconnected from our environment.
It's quite true.
A century ago, we lived off the earth. We died off the earth. We either grew enough food to get us through winter, or we had to know somebody where we could buy it from for those homesteaders, out in the mountains. And we were far more attuned with what was going on in the skies above us. And that's lost.
All right. Good morning. You're on the air with Scott Stevens.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
My name is Jason from Pocatello.
Man, do you watch Scott give the weather?
Yes, I do.
You do? I'm getting a lot of your viewers, Scott. Pretty cool. All right, caller, go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, well, first of all, I'd like to say that if people think that, that when you look at some of these picture stuff, if you think that this isn't, man-made, I think that's being pretty naive. I mean, you look at some of this,
I agree with you, caller. I'm new to it. I just saw it all for the first time, and it looks man-made to me.
Yeah, nature doesn't just come up with, 90-degree angles like that. So. But one thing I'd like to know is, now that he's opened this can of worms, I'm wondering if any of this is going to have any effect on his, on the way he brings us the weather here in Pocatello now.
That's such a good question.
Well, what I'm going to do...
yes, what are you going to do?
What I'm going to do, Well, I'm just going to have to point out the oddities. You know, I have, but it's been very subtle up until this point. When a large specific storm is headed into the West Coast, and they're going to turn it, they're going to change directions on it, it'll go into a very severe L shape, and then they'll break the storm. And it's by design. It's just obvious. You can look at the structure of the clouds, again, invisible or even high-resolution infrared imagery, and you can see them. You can see them doing it. And these are things that I'm going to begin to point out, and I expect that other weather people will begin to educate themselves, because I was looking for sources of information so I could have somebody to go to figure this out, and it's not there.
Well, either that or they'll torture you as a cat would torture a mouse. In other words, other weather guys may be more inclined to chuckle at you.
Let them. The audience will view them as fools as time goes on.
Well, it's also nice to know that we don't just have some cat giving us the weather. That
yeah, you apparently have a really gutsy weather person.
Exactly. So we're kind of lucky on that, man.
Obviously you are. I mean, most of them, well, some of them are very good looking. Of the female variety, and you just know they're not out studying the sky,
exactly.
Right?
Well, you know, it's a job I love doing. You know, and
obviously, yes.
I enjoy it. The sky is a great place to. It's different every time you look up. And I think that's what I enjoy about it, is that every day is just a little bit different. We have these long stretches like we're going into in this week out west, where the storms are being split and the drought will go on. The snowpack will continue to be down another 5 or 8% between this week and next week. There just isn't any change. It's status quo.
Well, caller, I bet you'll not be looking at his weather quite the same way ever again as you watch, huh?
No, it's going to be pretty interesting now, and I'm glad that we have somebody like that in our town, though.
All right, for you. Thank you very, very much for the call. Wonderful that we've heard from a few people who actually watch you give the weather every night. That's absolutely remarkable. So you think your audience and the management at your TV station is going to be pretty much cool with all of this. Sounds that way, anyway.
If it was not the truth, then there would be problems. But it's the truth, and so it we have to ride the wave. And it's going to be a wave. And we've discussed doing or not doing this story, as I talked to our executive producer on Friday.
Oh, I bet.
You know, because they're aware of it. You know, and the photogs come back, hey, Scott, I saw this and that, and, you know.
Scott, hold tight.
Yeah.
We're at a break point. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM in the nighttime.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed my guest this night, a TV weatherman named Scott Stevens, and he's let the cat out of the bag. He's saying, yes, our weather is controlled. Scott Stevens is my guest, and we're talking about weather control. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you.
Is there anything that that you would like to say to your obviously present TV? Did they know you were going to be on the program tonight?
I think once your producer called me, and it was put on your website.
Yes.
I actually got a call from the local paper.
Oh, you did?
Saying, I hear you're going international. And, you know, I give them the forecast anyway. So I shared some pictures with her.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, ooh, curious. And just kind of a little bit of a blurb on what we would be talking about.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know if it ran, though.
Uh-huh.
So I have enough to read without getting the paper. I'm sorry, guys. But, you know, there's just is too much going on to have to read, you know, mainstream news.
So you may or may not have, well, there were an awful lot of them here tonight, so I'm guessing they did run it.
Apparently, if you probably have other calls, if three have called, there are likely others.
What is your local paper?
The Idaho State Journal.
The Idaho State Journal?
Yep.
They'll run this.
Okay. And then so will others as the story gets out.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
I've been listening to your show, Art, for about 5 years. It's a great show.
Thank you.
My question was, before the hurricanes hit Florida, I live in Florida, and before the hurricanes got here, I noticed there was quite a few of the chemtrails up and down the East Coast. When the one hurricane turned and went north, and then when Francis and Jean came across the state, there was kind of chemtrails growing from east to west.
My feeling in what's happening is that the environment ahead of a large event like that is seeded, and some of the particles, some of the components of this of these persisting contrails are heavier metals. And these barium and aluminum could be, let's just say, traction for the scalar technology to get a hold of the atmosphere and essentially turn it on, ionize it, and then attract the water molecules, and then just step the storm into wherever they want it to go.
All right. So, you are imagining a chemical scalar interaction.
I believe that's a necessity. I truly, it's like adding studs to the snow tire. You just get a little better traction. Because you'll see those thin, wispy clouds with that pale pink and green hue.
Yes.
And then the ripples are there, and the ripples will be in opposing directions. It's just, okay, it's turned on, and it's grabbing a hold of that content first. And the cloud forms first at that layer, and then grows from there. And I'm coming to the conclusion that the spraying is connected to the scalar activity, and it's just, I really want to say that they know what's going on.
You know, I must tell you, Scott, I've suspicioned for a long time this was going on, and I had wondered when somebody like yourself, a weather person, would come forward and say, oh, you're not going to believe what I found.
Yeah.
And here you are,
the
first. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Everything, Scott, that you said, it brought back memories. About 8 or 9 years ago, a coworker who used to go to the shows in America brought back pamphlets about the weather war and that America was having. and it was from other countries, and the North Americans were actually like, we were more like the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said that they were using strong electromagnetic waves to hit, you know, like the shorelines, and it was causing a lot of, you know, erratic weather directions and behaviors. And also I wanted to know, my question is, didn't Nicholas Telsa create a rain or a storm in a room?
That's a pretty interesting question. Nikola Tesla did some pretty strange things. We don't know all about them because the government, of course, took a great deal of his research. But do you think he was toying with the powers that perhaps are being used now?
Oh, this is his work. This is his work. I mean, it without question is his work. This is how the first caller, and scratching the head wondering where the energy is coming from.
Yes.
If Tesla had been allowed over Edison, if Tesla's work had been accepted and ingrained within society, we would be free of oil. We would be free of coal-fired power stations, natural gas, hydroelectric. I mean, the man drove a car without a drop of gasoline for 14 years, for goodness sakes.
All right.
I mean, you could spend $30 million, give $5 million to six universities, let these electrical engineering students go through patents that have already been filed and approved, and then weed out the best ones and then present a plan a few months later on how to solve our energy problems.
All right,
it'd
Scott.
Be done.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Scott.
Hi.
Hi, this is David from Connecticut. I was wondering if you had considered magnetic pole shift, if it had been shifting lately.
Well, we pretty much know when the pole shifts. It wanders a little bit. There have been previous pole shifts and will be more. I'm not sure it relates to the weather question, or does it, Scott?
I don't think it does directly. I think dealing with weather is a surface. It's like changing clothes. And then dealing with a pole shift is something far more internal.
Okay.
And but still, we're using the planet as a conductor of electricity, of energy, and I don't know exactly how it's going to respond. It may not respond very kindly.
Perhaps not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm speaking to you from San Diego on 600 AM KOGO.
Yes, sir.
And I want to first commemorate Scott for sticking your neck out. You're going to be in for quite a surprise. And I want to back up your suspicions here that this is definitely something done by man's hand. And I want to point out to you a book that I looked at a few years back. I've been following this subject since it began back a few years ago when Will Thomas was on the air with Art Bell.
Yes.
Perhaps you remember they were discussing taking samples, and they were talking about the sludge that was falling out.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I didn't know what happened with that, but the book that I want to talk about is called A Shield in Space. And it talks about discussions by the Federation of American Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking before the chemtrail issue became about public knowledge about doing exactly that. And my suspicions that it is a multi-applicationary purpose seems to be just that. That's why it's hard to identify and put a finger on what it really is and why they're doing it, because it is multi-applicationary, such as controlling the weather, such as controlling communications.
Yes, and our you can imagine
they have staff in the aircraft.
Yes, and you can imagine, sir, that our Air Force, our military services would be intensely interested in anything like this. So there would be many hands and many goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you would believe that they would be first aware of it. But I guess from Tom Bearden's work, he briefed Reagan in 1984, and Reagan's NSA staff just didn't believe the man.
Right.
And so here we are. It's operational. We've got examples of it. The weather engineering has already begun. That El Nino of 82, 83 would have been a year or two in the past, which was an event triggered by this technology, and they're still not believing it happens. So you begin to see how far behind we are and how it can be asymmetric warfare, where one side overwhelmingly has an advantage. And with this technology, a missile defense system, of kill shots where you launch a missile and try to intercept another is just silly. It's just a silly investment. You need to do it electromagnetically like the Russians have.
All right. You're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
Hello. There was that, this is Jermaine here in the Sunshine Coast in British Columbia, right?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, there was a question a few calls back regarding the power. I'm surprised you didn't bring up HAARP, but 1 billion watts at least.
Well, of course, sir. We did bring up HAARP earlier in the program. You may have missed it.
Well, no, I mean, you had that call regarding the, you know, you were saying the energy had to call, come from outer space.
Yes, there are people who say 1 billion watts is a lot of power, and it is, as far as man is concerned. Whether it is in terms of affecting the weather or not, I can't answer that question.
Well, and what I'm finding is that there is something like a carrier wave just rolling constantly across the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and then there are smaller interference points where additional waves are introduced, and you get these standing wave patterns. And you can look in the marine layer, the low clouds that are off the California coast.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful test bed because there's no terrain around, no orographic effects, and you're looking for thousands of miles, and you can see this pulsing through the top of that marine layer. And it works from on an angle from west-southwest to east-northeast, and it lifts slowly north. And when storms approach, it changes, and you get deeper cuts, straight lines, parallel straight lines, running hundreds of miles in this marine layer. And it's just, it's one area that I watch. It's not impacted by man. Sure, there's some boats out there, but on the whole, this technology controls or does what these clouds want it to do. And think about being able to blanket a whole ocean with low cloud cover. Again, you're retaining heat or holding heat in.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible insulator. So we've got our pulse on the planet and trying to do either disguise warming that's happening much, much faster than is publicly stated, or other just simple control agendas that have nothing beyond terror involved.
A lot of it gets to be sort of a guessing game, I guess,
exactly.
About what we're doing and why we're doing it. What's not so much of a guess is the apparent evidence that you've presented that I think is evidence of absolute tampering. It's simply evidence that somebody's doing something.
Look at a page. Did you still have a side up, Art?
No, not at the moment.
Okay,
But I believe me, I'm convinced.
I was just going to say for the folks that look at broken clouds, where clouds are simply cut, and they're cut to look normal. Now, you know, it doesn't make sense, but intuitively, it does make sense. And they're look for just bands of clouds where there's just this little thin slice between them, and the clouds are simply broken. And then where the breaks are in the clouds, sometimes the cloud next to it does not line up on the base. Remember, at the beginning we talked about this lifted condensation level,
right,
which is the support for the cloud bottoms. And they don't, I mean, the cloud right next to it is maybe 200 feet higher. And there's just no natural explanation for this.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
This is HB from Enid, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I listen to Oklahoma City to get the weather reports all the time down there.
Right.
All right. On channel, I believe it was Channel 9,
mm-hmm.
who the weatherman would be Gary England, mm-hmm. and this was last winter. Well, there was a storm coming. It had just about gotten to the California coast. So he said the storm will reach Oklahoma, and he said the heaviest amounts will be around Enid and Medford.
Mm-hmm.
Medford's a town about 40 miles from Enid. And I thought, well, the guy's got to be insane. That's 1,500 miles away. It doesn't make any sense.
And now you can't do that. And one of the things
possibility.
That you just can't forecast. The models may tell you that that's where that the bullseye of the snow or the precip is going to be, but I'm to the point now where I just don't trust it. I mean, the storm can be on the doorstep, and I'm still uncertain as to whether it will arrive. Hence the square stamped out across the state,
yeah,
where the clouds have just been voided. And it really adds an uncomfortable amount of uncertainty that people count on us. I mean, these are life and death situations sometimes. And they count on us to provide them with accurate, truthful information.
And you're trying your best, but what you're saying is you can't provide that level of accuracy that you're accustomed
exactly.
to providing because of the manipulation.
The certainty has been removed. Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Steve in Kansas City.
Yes.
What a pleasure to be on with you and Scott. I can't tell you how many times in the past couple of years I've seen the sky look like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
And it has really upset me. A comment and a question. I used to live in Fairbanks, Alaska about 3 years ago.
Oh, how fun.
And I saw a hole in the sky one day where there were clouds all over the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a perfect round hole in the sky. And I was driving down what they call Farmer's Loop. There was a big dish there. And as we drove past the dish was pointed exactly at that hole.
In the hole.
Hmm.
Curious. Talking about holes in the sky, when you look at the satellite imagery I've got posted, you'll find these holes. And often where there is one, there is another. They're very close together. Fresno. With the fog socked in through the central valleys of California over the past week or so, this persistent hole has opened over Fresno. Why? And I was even reading one of the discussions out of one of the Weather Service offices in central California.
Uh-huh.
And they even pointed it out. The Fresno hole is back for the third day running.
The Fresno hole.
The next day it wasn't there. So I have to wonder, because this operation is so immense, whether they are scouring our data and our comments from our agencies in using that in this program. You know, it's just with the power of the Internet, information is just here and there in no time at all.
That's fact, isn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Oh, yes. Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Keith in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yes.
In November, I had chemtrails above my house for nearly 2 hours. The sky looked like a football gridiron. I even videotaped it, actually. Is it a normal trait of these to have an orb or ball-like things at the bottom underneath these chemtrails?
Okay. Scott?
That's something that was a surprise for me. And in taking the digital camera out and shooting these trails, is that these orbs would show up. And I'm not the only one to point them out. There's numerous other websites that are focused on those orbs and their possible reasons for being in and around these trails. But I'm not finding them in the pictures around regular commercial flights that are not doing
it. Gotcha. All right. Scott, we're coming to the end of the program. Now, you would like people, if possible, when they, after all, a million eyes in the night and in the day can take pictures of the anomalies that you've described and shown us tonight.
I want to see them.
And you'd like to see the pictures. Where do they send them?
On the website, we've got links, so you can email. I will get a physical address, so if it's on tape or on CD, we'll get a post office box so we can get that. I don't have one right now.
And your goal is to put together a CD, a compilation of what, evidence that you think will prove conclusively?
Well, by the time it's done, it'll be obvious to the world. By the time that's done, because this is going to happen, this is going to be a flash. With the attention that weather has gotten over the last couple of years, this is going to be a flash. And it will change people's awareness. And by the time that the DVD is done, it'll be April or May, and it won't be the only one. But that was the intent, was to begin to raise people's awareness.
Well, one thing's for sure. We live in a country where there's a billion digital cameras.
Hallelujah.
Everybody's got one, and nearly. And so I'm sure they're going to come up with these photographs, and they're looking for what? They're looking for squares and oblongs and things that you don't find normally in nature. Is that correct?
They will know when it doesn't fit. It'll be that obvious. It's geometric patterns. It's squares embedded in squares. It's visit the site. Visit my site. And
the site is?
Through it all, weatherwars.info. And you'll begin to see some of what I'm seeing, and then apply that. When you're doing the quick walk from the front door to the car, take an extra 15 seconds and just look around.
All right, that's weatherwars.info.com?
No.com, just dot info.
Just dot info. Weatherwars.info.
That's
all right, buddy. Listen, I want to thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
I guarantee a lot of light bulbs went on out there, including mine. Have a good night.
Thank you.
And good luck. That was quite a brave thing for Scott Stevens to do, a TV weatherman from eastern Idaho, blowing the lid off this whole thing from the high desert this night. You all have a good night and a fair weather day tomorrow. Ciao.